Monday edition of the War Room. We usually start with our Daily Dispatch, but today Donald Trump is live as we speak, taking and fielding questions in the Oval Office. We're going to go straight to Donald Trump. We'll do the Daily Dispatch on the other side. But first, here's the president taking questions live in the Oval Office in Washington, D.C. Let's watch.
Syria, Mr. President, on the U.S. troops killed in Syria over the weekend, why do we have troops in Syria?
Because we're trying to make sure that there's going to be and remain peace in the Middle East, and Syria is a big part of it. The new leader is a strong person, and that's what you need. This is a rough part of the world, and it's been amazing what's taken place in Syria. We got rid of Assad. We got rid of other people that were really bad people and that were in the way of peace in the Middle East. You know, we have legitimate peace in the Middle East, first time in 3,000 years. And we have 59 countries backing it. And we'll see what happens with Hamas. We'll see what happens with Hezbollah. But regardless, I mean, we have countries that want to go in and clean that out if we want them to do it. But they said in the case of Hamas, they said that they're going to disarm, and we're going to find out whether or not that's true. Hezbollah in Lebanon has been a problem. We'll see what happens there. But there is legitimate large-scale peace in the Middle East. And if there weren't, we wouldn't have been able to make all of those deals that we've made with the various countries. They would have never been able to do that. If, for instance, if Iran, if we didn't, with that B-2 bomber right there on the desk, if we didn't, of which we just ordered a lot more of the newer version, totally stealth. They could not see it. They knew it was coming. They had no idea where it was. It was pretty amazing, actually. Every bomb hit its mark perfectly, despite CNN trying to say differently. They didn't know. They just, you know, hoped. They hoped that we didn't, but it turned out that they did. Atomic Energy Commission confirmed it. So did Iran confirm it. They got knocked to hell. But if we didn't knock out their nuclear capability, we would have never had peace in the Middle East, because you would have had a dark cloud hanging over Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, and all the other countries, and they would have never, ever been able to sign an agreement. Yeah, please.
How soon do you expect that international stabilization force to be up and running in Gaza?
I think that it's in a form, it's already running. In a very strong form, it's already. But it'll get stronger and stronger, and more countries are coming into it. They're already in, but they'll send any number of troops that I ask them to send. They want to see peace. We have more than 59 countries. We have many countries that aren't even in the Middle East, but they're fairly close to the Middle East. They want to be involved. So it's been pretty amazing.
Mr. President, this week a man named Keone Rodriguez is going to federal prison for creating crypto privacy software. The case was started under the Biden administration, but your DOJ kept it going and secured the conviction. A lot of people in crypto are saying that this man should be pardoned. Are you familiar with the case at all, or would you be interested
in it? I've heard about it. I'll look at it. Why, you think he should be pardoned? Sounds like it. Sounds like, based on your question.
Many people on the
Rodriguez, we'll look at that, Pam. Okay, let's take a look at it. You know, you'll have to tell me. I don't know anything about it, but we'll take a look.
On Friday,
yeah, please.
Mr. President, market analysts are calling for a Santa rally. Typically, it's 5 trading days going into Christmas. You know, in the first 2 trading days of January, that's a sign of market optimism. Do you anticipate, along with the historical low gas prices, that continuing into the first quarter?
Well, we've had the greatest stock market in history, Brian. We have a stock market that's gone up 52 times to new highs during a 10-month period, my 10 months. You know, my first 10 months, we set a record. 52 days, we had the highest stock market in history, including a day ago. And I didn't look today. Maybe it's up today. I don't know. But we had 52 altogether, and there's never been anything like it. And the reason are the tariffs have brought vast amounts of wealth into our country that countries that have taken our car companies.
All right, folks, we are listening live to President Donald Trump take questions, as he does, it seems like, almost every day. I think it's worth it to pause and remind ourselves that Joe Biden, I'm pretty sure, did one press conference the entire last year of his presidency. Yeah, it's different, and it's good to actually be able to ask this guy questions. More on the other side.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room coming to you live on the Ides of December, 15th of December, 2025. We're waylaying our beginning of the show here. Talk about the Daily Dispatch. Donald Trump is live from the Oval Office, taking questions, talking to reporters, taking suggestions for who to pardon, because he really is a man of the people. Say what you want about him, and we're gonna say a lot about the failures of the Trump administration as they are multiplying. But think about how different it is today. When previously Joe Biden gave like one press conference every 6 months, and even then, there was a literal script that he was openly following. He'd get up and go, okay, next I'm supposed to call Jim from the AP and you're going to ask me about this and I'm going to say this. Go ahead, Jim. And it was like, well, what are we doing here? What is this? Pre-prepared questions and responses for the one press conference we get this year? Great. Meanwhile, Donald Trump every single day is taking any questions that get hurled at him and has a response to him. And then these people have the gall, have the temerity, have the sheer hubris to try to claim that they're concerned about Trump's mental health. Stuff it, you liars. Let's go back to Donald Trump here in the Oval Office actually interacting with the press. Isn't this something to behold? Let's watch.
He's ever seen before. That's going to be a massive industry. Without the tariffs, we wouldn't have that. Chips are coming in. Chip companies are coming in from Taiwan and other places, but mostly from Taiwan, which has almost 100% of the market. And we're now making chips. And we're not paying anything. It's not the CHIPS Act where they give billions of dollars to companies and then they just take the money and they run. That was under Biden. The fact that I set tariffs up and that if they don't make their chips here, they have to pay a big tariff. In order to send them into the U.S., they have to be here. You know, tariffs really work, in my opinion, almost only in the United States. They've been used against us successfully because we had presidents that had no clue. But tariffs really work. We have taken in hundreds of billions of dollars with tariffs. And more importantly, we've taken in countries and companies where, and even countries have sent their car making people into the United States in order to avoid paying tariffs. And they'll build a plant and they'll hire our people to make the cars. But we now have, as you know, Toyota just approved $10 billion in manufacturing plants in the United States using our people. Without tariffs, none of that would have happened. Tariffs have given us great national security. There's nothing like what's happened in the last 10 months. Tariffs have given us tremendous national security and tremendous wealth. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
All right. So that's Trump live taking questions from the Oval Office and answering all of them, really a wide range of questions and some pretty pertinent ones, even though he didn't really get down to it. The first question there that was live when we went to the video. Why are troops in Syria? I think that's a very pertinent question. Why are National Guard troops in Syria of all the branches of government? Yeah, it's the National Guard. They guard the nation. Okay, let's send him to the desert to be attacked by the Islamic offshoot of the CIA moderate rebels that we used to overthrow Syria because we had to engage in a 15-year covert so-called civil war in Syria to try to overthrow Assad because he was such a dangerous terrorist. But now that he's overthrown, all of the dangerous terrorists are cropping up and attacking American soldiers. Something doesn't add up here. We can get Scooby and the gang on this. Gee, I wonder what's really happening in Syria and why our soldiers are there. Yeah, we'll get into all of it. There's been a number of attacks over the weekend. And what you read into this, I guess, is largely informed by how you're coming into this conflict, this global conflict, ethno-religious political conflict. We'll investigate it. We'll look into these attacks and see if we can't find some sort of pattern. But it seems like this is all by design. It seems like everything's unfolding exactly like the Rockefeller Institute said it would, just like Klaus Schwab said it would. An angrier, more violent world is coming about, and we'll have to be ready to take advantage of, try to counteract this. And of course, if you looked at the lockstep document, as we always said, you have to see it as plan A, plan B, plan C. The lockstep document wasn't just some sort of neutral, objective observation of the way the earth might go and comments on that for fun, right? It was a planning document distributed to the world elite, the world controllers, to instruct them on the future course of events and various possibilities. And in the lockstep document, as we read it out over and over and over the last 5 years, because of how uncanny it was and its seemingly perfectly accurate prediction of the COVID-19 pandemic. Very coincidental. And that was the lockstep part of that document. There were four parts of the document. It's like better together, lockstep, hack attack, and some other one. But basically those three are A, B, and C. Better together is a picture of like a globe being held up by a bunch of diverse hands. And that was like if the American people voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, right? That was the, we're going to pretend like everything is nice and sunny and flowery as we systematically destroy your sovereignty and take you over and impose corporate control. But you'll just be blind and happy and sedated while we do it. Then there was lockstep, which is, okay, well, what if the people of the world find out? But what if they don't come along willingly? What if they resist? What if they find out our plans for them and instead come up with different plans that don't involve their subjugation, exploitation unto death? What do we do then? That was the lockstep. That was plan B. Okay, then release the virus, basically. Oh, they don't want to go into the cage willingly? Well, whoopsie-daisy. It looks like a mysterious virus cropped up. Guess you have to go inside and get permission to leave now. But that didn't work either. We still resisted that. We had their number on that. We predicted and then watched in real time as they unrolled the worldwide conspiracy during COVID. It actually woke more people up than it enslaved. So now it's plan C. It's hack attack. And in this planning document, just like Klaus Schwab's final days, the World Economic Forum was all about, oh, everything's going to go into fractionalism and the central powers of the governments are going to be weakened while people just worry about, you know, basic survival. They're not going to be able to give so much to charity or whatever else. And the instructions from the Rockefeller Foundation, from the organizing managerial institutions above the globalists, was take care of yourself. Basically, the instruction to the elite were like, you're going to have to hire bodyguards. You're going to have to get compounds. You're going to have to not rely on the institutions of the government to protect you. You're going to have to, it's going to be private protection. And basically the instructions were consolidate, fractionalize, you know, stay together and manipulate things in small scale because the large scale things are going to be disrupted by a rising tide of populism. So it's hard for me to see all of the chaos going on around the world and not see the hidden hand of the people whose entire power structure is derived from, based on, dependent on manufactured crises. It's hard not to see their hands at work here. But the brilliant thing about false flags, the brilliant thing about their strategy is you can't exactly ignore it. You can't exactly ignore it. You can't exactly go, well, this is a false flag attack, therefore we're not going to pay attention to it. Like, well, people are still dead, right? The attack actually happened. You do actually have to fight back against the attacks. Just like COVID. It's like, yeah, maybe it was released on purpose. It almost certainly was released on purpose from a lab as designed. But you still, it can still infect you. You could still catch the disease and get sick. So while you recognize, okay, the problem reaction solution paradigm is at work here, they create the problem by releasing the virus. Now they provide the solution by lockdown, all that stuff. But you have to be able to thread the needle and go, okay, I don't want to fall for the fear mongering and just rush to, you know, daddy government to solve my problems when clearly they're the ones that created it. At the same time, I don't want to die from some lab created abomination of a disease that they've released on the world. So how do we deal with this? How do we deal with the rising tide of things like Islamic, radical Islamic violence while not giving in to the false dichotomy that says, okay, we have to have the anti-Semitism laws to deal with it? How do we deal with the reality of the attack while not falling for the false flag aspects of it? I think is sort of where we're at as a world right now. So yes, I do believe the destabilization is part of the Cloward and Piven strategy to collapse the West in order to usher in a new system. At the same time, the destabilization is real and has to be confronted, and the causes of it have to be dealt with and cured before the symptoms can be eradicated. We're in a tough spot. We're in a tough position. I think we can handle it. I think we just need to have a clear mind about all of this and understand first and foremost that the fear and the anger and the frustration is deliberately created because it overrides your logic. And you can actually take a deep breath, step back, look at this from a bird's eye view, and better understand where we go from here and how you deal with it in an appropriate and still powerful way while not succumbing to the mind wipe that is deliberately created fear. Let's begin, as we do every day here, with our Daily Dispatch, shall we? All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 15th of December, 2025. Crazy story here. Rob Reiner's son, Nick, has been charged with murder following the deaths of his parents. Rob and Michelle Reiner were killed in their Los Angeles home on Sunday, December 14th. Nick Reiner, their son, has now been taken into custody following the deaths of his parents. He's charged with two counts of murder. They were killed in their Los Angeles home last night. Before he was arrested, People, the publication, reported Nick was being questioned by the Los Angeles Police Department's robbery and homicide division. He has been taken into custody. There are reports that there was a public argument between Nick Reiner and his parents at a Christmas party at Conan O'Brien's house the night before, are the rumors that we've heard. But this guy, the son Nick, was an addict. He had gotten clean and made a movie about his recovery, but clearly he's had a lot of struggles with addiction and homelessness. We can look more into this as more information comes out. Of course, Trump has used the occasion to dunk on Rob Reiner, which, okay, I mean, I understand the impulse. Rob Reiner was a not a easily tolerated man. If you're a Trump supporter over the last couple of years, I get the impulse, but he is dead now. So yeah, you won, Trump. Good job. You won. Let's have some, grace and victory, please. It's just a little weird. We'll read his statement here in just a little bit, but, Rob Reiner and his son exercised drug demons with Being Charlie at Toronto Film Festival. Yeah, that was the movie that, the son wrote, and I believe acted in, if I'm not mistaken, about his own recovery. Anyway, we'll look into that, but really tragic event. Meanwhile, actually, almost all of our stories are tragic events in today's Daily Dispatch. Another tragic event, two victims named in Brown University shooting as police continue to search for the killer. Two students who died on Saturday's mass shooting at Brown University were being remembered Monday as a manhunt for their killer continued following the release by authorities in Rhode Island of the sole person of interest detained in the case. And this has been a series of debacles, as far as I can tell. and there may be a reason for that. The theory is, the rumors are, and I don't even know what to report here because basically everything that's been reported then later gets retracted. Again, this whole thing has been really an embarrassment. Donald Trump was tweeting out that they caught the guy, then he had to retweet out that they didn't. The FBI is basically embarrassed over this. I can't help but wonder if this isn't yet another sort of flare-up, another symptom of the overall nationwide, in, you know, every industry-wide phenomenon of the incompetency crisis. The competency crisis, the lack of competency, looks an awful lot like this, where you get a bunch of conflicting information, no evidence one way or the other, apparently, like no videos, despite universities in general, and this university in particular, being completely covered in cameras constantly. Two videos have been released, and to be honest, they, like, you might as well play the January 6th pipe bomber video. Like, the similarities are kind of striking, first and foremost, in the fact that it gives you absolutely nothing to go on. I mean, the videos are, like, almost worse than useless. There are two videos. One show the guy walking away, or girl walking away, we don't even know. The individual walking away from the camera for a few seconds, can't tell anything about it. And then here's the other one, the one that was most recently released. And it's almost an insult. It's like the police put this out and they go, if you know this guy, tell us. And it's like Bigfoot. It's a shadow walking along a wall. Like, oh, there he is. That's Jeff. Like, what? How? What? How is that the only... The man went onto a university campus, shot somebody in a classroom, shot multiple people in a classroom, and the two videos you have are less, give us less information than the photos out of Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Like, what are we talking about here? So it's been, incompetence abounds. And of course, this is also being treated and being interpreted as, and likely not too far off the mark, yet another targeted attack against conservatives. Apparently, the main victim, the rumor is, the latest story, or I don't know, imagine this will be correct at some point, wasn't a random shooting. It was targeted at this one individual. Other people were either caught in the crossfire or just became, you know, additional victims. But apparently the shooter was going after Ella Cook, a young girl, a second year student from Alabama, who was, quote, an incredible, grounded, faithful, bright light, according to Catholic Church of the Advent Birmingham, which paid tribute to her to service on Sunday. She apparently was a very outspoken conservative, and the leader of the conservative club there in Brown University. So perhaps not a coincidence, as we just continue to see almost weekly examples of far leftist attacks against, whether it's National Guard members, shooting at Tim Pool's house, swattings on other, you know, right wing personalities, shooting at Brown University. It kind of feels like we're in like an undeclared war a little bit. It feels like one side of the country is at war with the other side of the country. See, our side of the country, we understand. People at InfoWars get it. Of course, we're not going out and killing random members of the other side. We're not at that level yet, because we still have this possibly delusional hope that the most powerful country in the world, with $1 trillion a year military budget, could perhaps be useful in defending the nation against the attack from inside by agitators who are trying to destroy us. One would hope. We are, in fact, holding on, clinging to a desperate hope that we could use the incredible, inordinate power of American law enforcement to actually protect the American people and not have to just devolve into clannish civil war, but we've been disappointed before. Meanwhile, on the other side of the globe, Australian police are investigating the Sydney shooting as terrorism. Sydney police said on Monday they expect to bring criminal charges against the gunmen hospitalized after a shooting spree in which 15 people were killed in one of the deadliest attacks on the Jewish community in the nation's history. The authorities said they found evidence that the attack on Sunday at the city's famed Bondi Beach, which is said was carried out by a father and son, was an act of terrorism targeting Sydney's Jewish community during a Hanukkah celebration, but they declined to provide additional details, including the suspect's ideology or exact motive. At least 38 people remain hospitalized following the attack at Bondi Beach, a half-mile crescent of sand a few miles from downtown Sydney. I look forward to corrections on how to pronounce. It looks like Bondi to me, but I hear other people saying Bondi. Regardless, an absolutely brutal tragedy, and you got to worry for the people of Australia. As again, the stories out of Australia for the last several months, at least from our position, from the InfoWars side of things, every story out of Australia has been about the brutal crackdown on anybody in Australia that was warning that this type of thing would happen. Like for several months, the people in Australia who are saying we don't want any more of these immigrants, they are at odds with our culture, they don't care about being Australian, they're also violent and abusive, we don't want them here. The people saying that are the ones that have been ruthlessly imprisoned and thrown in jail and allowed to be attacked. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, Aboriginal Antifa members literally setting bombs off and not even getting jail time. And so all of the people in Australia who have been trying desperately to find a political solution to the growing problem of hostile immigrants have been brutally repressed by the Australian regime. And now the inevitable outcome of that is this. And of course, the Australian government's response is to blame the right wingers. So it's only getting worse. So it's only getting worse. We'll get back to that. Okay. We have another attack that apparently was foiled. FBI disrupts credible imminent terrorist threat. Four members of radical pro-Palestinian group arrested, accused of plotting an attack on LA's New Year's Eve celebration. Kash Patel announced that a credible imminent terrorist threat targeting Los Angeles New Year celebration has been disrupted, and four members of a radical pro-Palestinian group have been arrested. Patel shared on X over the weekend, the FBI disrupted this credible imminent threat and arrested four individuals. They identify as a radical offshoot of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, an extremist group motivated by pro-Palestinian anti-law enforcement and anti-government ideology. They were allegedly planning coordinated IED bombing attacks on New Year's Eve, targeting five separate locations across Los Angeles. See, I've got questions about this, too. The designation, the characterization of this group as being pro-Palestinian gives the impression that that's what's motivating this response. However, they're called the Turtle Island Liberation Front. And if you don't know, Turtle Island is a, like, nativist, it's a, Native Americans used to call America Turtle Island. That was their name for America, was Turtle Island. So this is, seems less to me like a pro-Palestinian movement and more like a sort of run-of-the-mill Antifa, anti-American, you're all colonizers, left-wing, pseudo-faux-nativist communist agitator group. That's what it seems like to me. But they're probably post-up pro-Palestinian as well. We'll look into that a little bit more. Finally, we have this. EU globalists threaten to dump $2.34 trillion in U.S. debt to stop Trump's Ukraine peace deal. The EU's pro-war globalist anti-American leaders are doing everything in their power, including weighing what's being called a nuclear option of deliberately shaking the foundations of the U.S. economy to block a peace settlement in Ukraine, even as President Trump advances direct negotiations aimed at finally ending the nearly four-long inter-Slavic war. So basically, the EU now, because they have no army and no ability to fight, are basically saying we're going to bankrupt the U.S. if you try to stop us from killing all of our own people in war. They're insane and suicidal. We have to save them.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. Being the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a 357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, I have not yet begun to fight. And 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived. Hopefully we go past that with my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, we don't have funds coming in December and January. There won't be money for payroll. There won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars, with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, make no peace with evil, with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You can get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition right now, exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff, keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up, and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Sha-la-da-la-la, Christmas time. Sha-la-da-la-la,
Christmas. Welcome back, folks. The crew is in the spirit of the season. It's always a little jarring to me. I'm sitting here during the break watching the clock count down till we go live again. I'm just thinking about all the attacks, all these vicious attacks against right wingers, just running through my mind all the various forms they've taken. So I'm picturing things like the Waukesha Christmas parade attack, radical black sovereign citizen guy running over little girl, and just like all this crazy stuff. And then in comes the bright and cheery Christmas music. Tis the season, right? Tis the season. But you know, I mentioned in the last segment, this undeclared war, it's not even really an undeclared, it's an unresponded to war. It's weird. It's very weird. The left is just like, we are in war with you. And then they shoot us. And then we do nothing about it. Nothing happens. And then they laugh about it. And they say, we're going to do it again. And then they do it again. And then we just repeat the cycle. It feels wrong. It feels weird. It feels like this has been the case for the last 5 years or so. I actually made a very long video in like June of 2020, like 75 unanswered questions about Black Lives Matter. And basically the whole theme of it was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure America is at war right now with itself. Like there's a civil war going on and one side just isn't fighting. It's been this way for 5 years, and it's getting to a really intolerable place. And the problem is that the enemy has hijacked the systems that would otherwise alert the American people to the fact that they're under attack. Because the TV isn't telling Americans that they're under attack, they cannot conceive of that. I don't know why. I think it's pretty obvious. Not sure why CNN has to, you know, dictate for you whether you can recognize patterns or not, but I would hope you were able to. Because the problem is, even if you go to Grok or ChatGPT and ask them about violence against right-wingers, they use mainstream sources that refuse to count the actual attacks against right-wingers as political violence. So then the result you get is like, yeah, you know, violence is cropping up here or there, but it's about evenly split, and, you know, there's been, you know, like eight right-wingers killed in the last few years, which, you know, is eight more than the left-wingers. You have to admit that, but, you know, oh well. And then, like, I'm just sitting here thinking of all of the examples that I can summon off the top of my head that aren't included. So, you know, as I mentioned this in the last segment, this undeclared war, this one-sided war. And so they asked ChatGPT, was this ChatGPT or Grok, guys? I think this was ChatGPT, right? Oh, this is Grok. Okay, so yeah, they asked Grok, for notable instances of political violence targeting conservatives, Republicans, or right-wing individuals since 2016. Political violence in the U.S., Grok says, remains relatively rare overall, with data from sources like the Center for Strategic and International Studies and the Global Terrorism Database indicating that incidents motivated by partisan or ideological extremism affect a small number of people annually compared to non-political violence. Well, yes, duh. What? Okay. Obviously. What? Okay, thanks, Grok. Yes, non-political violence is, in fact, much greater than political violence. Okay. Sorry, that threw me off. AI is so smart sometimes and so dumb other times. Getting to the point, it says, you know, below is a table summarizing the major verified incidents involving physical shooting or direct attacks, excluding foiled plots without contact, like the 2024 Trump golf course attempt. I've focused on neutral sources like CSIS, ABC News, and Wikipedia. Oh, you know, neutral, objective sources like ABC News and Wikipedia. Two of the most biased sources you could possibly imagine. The total across these say that 11 people have been shot or physically attacked, with 3 killed and 8 injured. This excludes broader 2020 protest clashes, where an estimate of 50 to 100 Trump supporters on or right-wing protesters were assaulted, injured, but not always shot. So even this alone, like, why would you not include those numbers? They're a part of protests. Okay. So what they list is like the congressional baseball practice shooting in Alexandria, Virginia, where Representative Steve Scalise, Zach Barth, Matt Mika, Crystal Griner were all shot. Rand Paul, of course, was there. Scalise was critically wounded. The Portland protest shooting of Aaron J. Danielson, which is completely targeted assassination, the assassin going on to be celebrated by the likes of Vice News. Then, of course, Donald Trump was shot at in Butler, Pennsylvania. Corey Compitore was killed. David Dutch, a rally attendee, and James Copenhaver were also hurt. And then, of course, you had the Charlie Kirk shooting. They come to a total of 11 people, 3 killed. But again, what about all of the other attacks? Like, what is this list? If you present me this list, yeah, obviously, the left wing is far more trigger happy than the right wing. You don't have a comparable list of left wingers shot at or killed in the last 10 years. What about all of the other? What about the Waukesha Christmas parade? What about it's kind of hard to even like know where to classify it, but I would consider any attack against America as being a left-wing terror attack. I mean, you have such an obvious overlap and such an obvious shared cause as like the, you know, Muslim terrorists that ran a truck down Bourbon Street on New Year's, and, you know, people who are killing Corey Compitore, like, it's the same impulse. I guess these are directly at right-wing individuals, but, like, would you not consider Luigi Mangione a left-wing assassin? I mean, the person he went after, Christian, white guy, rich, Republican, shot him in the back, celebrated by the left, celebrated by socialists and communists throughout the country. I mean, he's not on the list. I guess it sort of depends on where you draw the line. And how much of the, how much leeway you're willing to give to, you know, the shooter, their motivation. I mean, is Irina Zarutska not a victim of left-wing terror? Which wing of the political party is constantly demonizing white people as their enemies? Telling their side that white people, white Christians, slaughtered all the Indians when the Indians were just trying to be nice. So they kind of deserve to be killed. Stab her in a car full of non-white people. The instant the first white girl gets on, he gets up, stabs her, says, got that white woman. Not political terrorism. No, he's just insane. He's just crazy. So it's been continuous. And again, we have to learn how to deal with this. We have to figure out how to deal with this by both going after the actual problem, going after the core, the root of these issues, the disease that's causing the symptoms of the violence and the chaos and the misery, while not succumbing to the fear or the panic that would lead you into empowering the other set of people who hate you. And this is especially important when it comes to somewhere like Australia. And the only lesson that should be learned from the shooting in Australia now is that everything that's come before hasn't worked. Everything they're doing now is not working. Did not prevent this shooting. In fact, probably facilitated the shooting. When you have a media that is, you know, downplaying violent crime, when you have, you know, a government that's complicit in helping to cover up or downplay or do everything they can to avoid crushing violent left-wing activities. I mean, when you have a radical left-winger plant bombs in Australia and not even go to jail for it, what type of signal is that sending? Yeah, I would consider all of this part of the same sort of combat going on. And to add to that, like, the left is so sort of retarded anyway, it's hard to know where these lines are drawn. Because to be honest with you, there's a lot of people that are responsible for all of this that are like the first ones in the crosshairs of the very monsters they created. And it's kind of hard to feel like you're on the same side as them. But we kind of have to recognize that. I think you'll get what I'm saying. Let's go to clip number 11 here. Because this is in Southern California, a gated community where it's like all these, you know, rich, you know, jackass millionaire, lefty socialist morons that run Hollywood live. And they have Antifa members decked out in like high tech military garb, standing at the gate of their gated community with a phone, filming everybody coming in and out of the community. An obvious, overt sign of intimidation of like, we're making lists of everybody that we're going to kill. Like, that's the message that they're sending. Now, these rich, out-of-touch jackasses in this California subdivision, are they on our side? I typically would not say they are. But, like, they're the ones that are allowing this to go on. So it's almost like, do I even feel bad for them? I'm not on Antifa's side, but what are we supposed to do here? you kind of asked for this. You kind of created this yourselves, and you're going to be the first heads on the chopping block when your little Jacobin friends start the reign of terror. So do you not recognize this? Do you not realize who exactly you're empowering? Let's go to clip 11. This should honestly be terrifying. This is terrifying, like especially really wealthy, rich people in, you know, Democrat areas that don't have guns. Like, you should be worried. Let's watch. There's a little black block dweeby goblin. He's not hiding. He's not like hiding in the bushes. He's not doing this in a clandestine fashion. And people have gone through the image, and the dude's got like multiple 360 degree cameras on him. He's got, you know, new iPhone. He's not exactly being shy. He's got the body, you know, cam thing. He's got his face covered. He's taking pictures of the people coming in and out of this gated neighborhood. Like, this is an act of intimidation. Are the people in this subject, are they worried about this? Are they concerned about this, maybe? That this type of open intimidation is taking place? And, like, I understand that the right wing is convinced that we've won and that, you know, the only thing you have to do is like, laugh at these guys. It's like, okay, you can laugh. Like, look at all the equipment he has on him. Now, I'd never call for violence, but that's, like, couple $1,000 worth of equipment that guy's carrying around. I would take it from him, personally. Do people really understand where things are getting to at this point? I don't think we do. Like, I don't think the left realizes the radicals that they've empowered. I don't think the right is taking this threat seriously at all. And I think the left wing, the radical ends of the left spectrum, are like very, very emboldened, very, very energetic, and organizing rapidly across the entire country. They are on the march, and we know that they plan on literally shutting down the entire economy in 2028, and they've got 2 years of plans that they're fulfilling up till then. So we could stop it at any point. We could put a stick in the spokes at any moment. We just have to take the threat seriously and then stop it. But we're not doing that. So don't say we didn't warn you. Let's go to, let's stick in America for now. We'll go to clip number 7 here. This is the DOJ announcing these arrests for the New York, New Year's Eve, LA, New Year's celebration attack they foiled. Let's watch.
The four defendants are Audrey Carroll, 30 years old. The pictures, I think we have them somewhere. We'll put them up here. Audrey Carroll, 30 years old. Zachary Aaron Page, 32. Dante Gaffield, 24. And Tina Lay, 41. Each from the Los Angeles area. Each is charged with conspiracy and possession of an unregistered destructive device in violation of Title 26, United States Code Section 5861D. We intend to file additional charges in the coming weeks as we finish reviewing the evidence. The defendants are all radical anti-government members of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, which, according to their own social media, is an anti-capitalist, anti-government movement that calls for their associates to rise up and fight back against capitalism. One of the leaders of the organization, defendant Audrey Carroll, helped organize an even more radical faction of the group called the Order of the Black Lotus. Each of the defendants charged today was also a member of the Order of the Black Lotus. Carroll described this group to her co-conspirators as everything radical. As detailed in the federal complaint, which we will now make public, in November 2025, defendant Carroll created a detailed bombing plot to use explosive devices to attack five or more locations across Southern California on this upcoming New Year's Eve. Carroll and her co-defendant, Zachary Page, led the effort to obtain and build the bombs and to recruit others to join in their plot. Carroll's bomb plot was explicit. It included a step-by-step instructions to build IEDs, or improvised explosive devices, and listed multiple targets across Orange County and Los Angeles. Carroll also made clear her desires. She said, quote, "What we are doing will be considered a terrorist act." Carroll and Page also discussed plans for follow-up attacks after their bombings, which included plans to target ICE agents and vehicles with pipe bombs. Carroll stated that those plans would, quote, take some of them out and scare the rest.
So there you go. FBI disrupted alleged terrorist bombing plot in Los Angeles, according to officials. Explosive devices were intended to detonate on New Year's Eve, officials said. And again, when this was reported, it was reported as a radical pro-Palestine group. And it's like, on one of their signs, they had the word Palestine. Turtle Island Liberation is liberating America from the American government. This is a American domestic terrorist organization of Americans. You're telling me, official news report, that there are groups in America that are operating as open, self-advertised domestic terrorist organizations, and they have names and various affiliations with other groups, the Turtle Island Liberation Front, the whatever else, John Brown Gun Club. So they all associate with one another and are have allegiances to different groups that are all working with each other. So it seems like you wouldn't have to just arrest the four people actively involved in making the bomb, but rather everybody in their group, kind of like the left did on January 6th with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. It seems like since these groups, which could collectively be called Antifa, all have individual cells with names and like established power structures, that this would be the type of thing that would be incredibly easy to round up all of them before they commit a mass casualty attack. Am I missing something here? So now that we have these four, I imagine they're being questioned, they're being pressured, they're going to be sent away for a long time anyway, but you might be able to make their stay in government hotel a little bit more comfortable if they were to give up their co-conspirators and other people involved, right? So this one arrest is going to lead to a sprawling investigation rounding up everybody, right? I mean, I'm sure we're going to see that coming soon. Or will this be portrayed as a anti-Semitic attack and we'll get more laws destroying the First Amendment? Which way are we going to play this? Which way are we going to take this threat, the domestic terror threat against Americans, against ICE, against Los Angeles, and people celebrating New Year's Eve by a bunch of homegrown, radical, domestic terrorists, Antifa goons? I wonder. I mean, it seems like we get these incredible breaks that reveal this is sprawling interconnected network. Then we arrest only the people that actively shot at ICE agents, like what happened in Texas. Or we're actively building bombs to plant in LA. Like, yes, you should arrest those people and all of their friends. Where's that part of this equation? Again, same thing happened with the shooting in Texas. They're celebrating like, oh, the first arrest and convictions by these domestic terrorist Antifa cells. And it's all the people that were actively on the ground shooting at the ICE officers. Like, yes, I would hope that we would be able to put them away. I would also hope that you'd be able to get all of their co-conspirators, the thousands and thousands of people they talk to online about all of this. But we're not seeing that. Why not? You declared them domestic terrorists. Why aren't they being treated like that? Doesn't make any sense. It's like they're just doing the bare minimum. And I have trouble even trusting this. Who knows? Who knows, whether the FBI even like helped spearhead this attack in the first place anyway. The agents said four were arrested in Lucerne Valley, where they were believed to be preparing to test explosive devices ahead of the planned attacks. They have been charged with conspiracy and possession of a explosive device. Pam Bondi added, after an intense investigation, the Justice Department, working with our FBI, presented what would have been a massive and horrific, prevented what would have been a massive and horrific terror plot in the Central District of California, Orange County, and Los Angeles. The Turtle Island Liberation Front, a far-left, pro-Palestine, anti-government, and anti-capitalist group, was preparing to conduct a series of bombings against multiple targets in California beginning on New Year's Eve. The group also planned to target ICE agents and vehicles. So, At the same time, we have this shooting in Brown University that appears to be the targeted shooting of basically there's, as far as I can tell, there's really only two possibilities with the Brown shooting. Either this was a, you know, targeted killing of Ella Cook herself, perhaps because of some sort of, you know, just personal animus. That's not totally out of the question. But if it's not that, if we don't find out that the shooter was like her ex-boyfriend, if the shooter wasn't, you know, targeting her in particular for some sort of, you know, perceived slight, that would put this in the realm of just, you know, domestic violence, which it very well could be. If it's not that, then this was just another example of Republicans being targeted for assassination by violent leftists. And it's one of those two things, as far as I can tell. Cook was the vice president of Brown's chapter of College Republicans of America. Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, also posted condolences on X, saying there are no words, thinking of her friends and family, especially of her parents. The only other person killed was Muhammad Aziz Umerzokov, a Uzbek national, in his first year of study at the Ivy League University. His identity was confirmed by Uzbekistan's foreign ministry. Nine other people were hurt in Saturday's attack in the engineering building of Brown's campus in Providence during the school's final exam period. Authorities said late Sunday that a 24-year-old man arrested at a raid at a Hampton Inn about 17 miles from Kansas campus earlier in the day was being released. So apparently they used some sort of cellular telemetry to find this guy in this hotel. They arrest him as a person of interest, interrogate him, announce that they captured the guy, and then later have to release the guy. And they actually go so far as to say not only is he no longer a suspect, he's not even a person of interest anymore, which is very weird. Usually a person of interest remains a person of interest, you know, even after the suspect is caught, right? It's somebody who, like, is acting suspicious or they know the person. But in this case, it seems like this guy had literally nothing to do with this at all. So he's not even a person of interest anymore, let alone a suspect. That's how badly they missed the mark on that one. So they have nothing. They have nothing, and the videos they've released are almost worse than worthless. They are also nothing. More on the other side, folks. I haven't even told you, I know this is a mistake on my part, because the sale ends tonight to get 40% off everything at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com, 40% off every single item in the store. It ends tonight at midnight.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Christmas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. The left understands that they are at war with us. It's time that we get on the same page. They're attacking from every direction, not just literally, physically going out and trying to kill right-wingers and in some cases succeeding. But obviously in the political front, the information warfare front, they are moving forward at speed while we become more and more frustrated with the lack of action from the so-called leaders in our on our side of things. And projecting this outward, I really have a not very bright outlook, and we'll get into that this hour about the way the American government and politicians are going to respond to this in the worst way ever. But I want to first go to this video. This is from a friend of the show, Carlin Borashenko, and we're going to have her on later this week, hopefully, to expand on this. As we know, the left is planning a massive nationwide total permanent strike on May 1st, 2028. They're gearing up and getting ready for this because they want to shut down the entire economy in order to hold the U.S. hostage until we meet their demands. Here's Carlin Borashenko showing some frustration that nobody else is taking this seriously. Let's watch.
2.5 years from now, when the left shuts down the entire economy on May 1st, 2028, none of these people are going to see it coming. Oh, this has no cultural relevance to us. Donald Trump really took care of that woke problem. The left is going to shut down the economy completely in 2.5 years, and they're going to do practice runs leading up to that, organizing across every union. I know this because I've been in the organizing calls where they've been talking about it, and they've been talking about it for about a year now. They're literally holding schools all over the country to help people organize a strike. It's May 1st, 2028. That is the mass general strike they've been talking about for years. And no one is aware of this because no one listens to the left except for me and my community. May 2026 is one of the practice runs, but it's not going to be the only practice run. It's just the soonest one probably coming up. But May 1st, 2026 is not going to be the big one. The big one is going to be on May 1st, 2028, which is when all of the unions have negotiated to have their contracts expired at exactly the same time. That is the big one. And the reason, and this is led by the United Auto Workers, the reason that they all negotiated to have their contracts end on May 1st, 2028 is to do a mass general strike to shut down the economy. And none of these people are going to see this coming. They're going to be like, oh, the left is doing some stupid protesting thing. They're going to ignore all the practice runs that the left is doing. They're going to ignore all the organizing calls that the left is doing. The left is not secretive about this. They literally do conference presentations about this strategy. They are literally coordinating across all the major labor unions on this strategy. They are not covert about it at all. And no one on the right has any idea that this is coming. And when it does happen, every single one of these people is going to be caught off guard. Oh, all of a sudden, the left has become a cultural problem for us because now it's beyond memes on Twitter. Now they've literally shut down the entire economy to include the supermarkets, to include the airlines, to include the auto workers, to include Amazon, to include every major, to include the K-12 public schools through all of the teachers' unions. But because Richard doesn't have Antifa showing up at his door like he did in 2016, he thinks nothing is happening and Trump has totally solved the problem. And Nick just goes along with it. Yeah, you're so right. Okay. Okay. All right, fine, whatever. At least I'll be prepared and my community will be prepared and we're going to know what the fuck is going on and no one else is going to know what the fuck is going on because everyone only wants clickbait outrage bullshit on Twitter and that's all people fucking care about or whatever memes people are posting.
Yeah, powerful stuff. We should probably be aware of this and we should probably stop it before it creates another communist revolution like Germany 1918, exactly what they're planning.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. A lot of various threads coming together this weekend. We've got the various attacks, whether it's in Australia or here in America, Brown University or Bondi Beach. Then you also have more stories of just completely random violence that itself seems to be just the consequence or symptom of our ever less solidified national identity. Some really horrific stuff. Plus just the sheer incompetence of it all. As we're getting conflicting stories about the shooter in Brown and videos that you couldn't possibly, you know, recognize. And then there's this weird thing where, yeah, I wouldn't even trust the authorities to tell us what they know if they knew it. Like, I can't tell if they know things and they're just withholding it because they want to portray a certain narrative, or whether they don't even know. Like in the Brown University case, the shooter busts into this lecture hall and shouts something. Now, it hasn't been officially reported what he shouted, at least not that I could find. Seems like they probably know. Why wouldn't they tell us what he shouted? Like, did he shout Allahu Akbar? Is that what it is? Did he shout something? I mean, it might be useful to know this, especially as we haven't found him yet. I mean, it might help to guide the search, might help certain communities know whether he might be a part of their population or not, but that's all being withheld. Why? Why are they withholding whatever it is? We don't know what he yelled. Was this a targeted attack because Ella Cook was a prominent right winger? That's what a lot of people are suggesting. In fact, let's go to this is Mark Halpern, clip number 17, about the rumors going around about what may have been the impetus for the shooting in Brown University. Let's watch.
People are telling me that the family of I just need to look up her name. I apologize.
Ella Cook, I think.
Thank you,
Mark.
Thank you. That the family of Ella Cook, the Alabama young woman who was a sophomore, has been told that she was the target of what happened at Brown. I have no idea whether that's true. There's other theories about why the person did what they did, but now that we don't know who the assailant is, it's going to be harder to say. But if it's true that she was targeted, that's a big story, because she was one of the most visible conservatives on that campus. Don't know that it's true, but probably most of you don't even know that that's being alleged, because you'd have to follow certain accounts on X or have sources, as I do, who are telling me that. So, Amber, if she was targeted, and again, we don't know that, but if she were targeted, what would the implications of that be?
Well, I'll start with a couple of things that I think lend credence to that theory, which is, one, typically when we see mass school shooters, they don't just stop and walk away, right? Usually they keep going until they're apprehended by police, shot dead or they kill themselves.
Yeah. Amber, let me just stop you. Yep. I should have been clear. She was the number two person at the Young Republicans branch on Brown's campus. So that's why some people are concerned if she were targeted. Go ahead, Amber. I apologize.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, if the police are telling Brown students that they are safe, they don't have to shelter in place anymore, but they don't have a suspect in custody, I think that also suggests that this was some kind of targeted attack. Sadly, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, when I was on campus at Georgetown, I was chair of the College Republicans. I had to report multiple threats against me in my final 2 years on campus.
So basically, nothing is ever done when the right wing is the subject of threats. Nothing is ever done when they're even subject of violence. It's treated as a one-off, you know, singular explosion of mental illness that we just have to be sad about and move on. And again, it's a pattern that is becoming a little bit ridiculous, especially when it's just like over and over and over again, it's the right wing being targeted. And over and over and over again, what we're told the biggest concern now is, you know, the threat of right wing retaliation. It's like, I wish the right wing retaliated. I wish. I mean, maybe that would then justify your concern. But so far, no, the concern should be for the groups of people that are doing the murdering, not the ones being murdered. And again, it gets bizarre and becomes so apparent how just nonsensical any of this is when there's an attack against any other group of people. I mean, if that's how we're supposed to treat things, then right now, everything out of Australia should be, you know, concerns about, you know, the Jewish community retaliating. There should be, you know, a lot of concern, maybe some extra couple million dollars in security cash for Muslims in Australia right now. But it doesn't really work that way, does it? It never actually seems to work that way. In fact, I think user Kittler on X at Kittler512 just put it very simply. When they attack white people, it's don't look back in anger. When they attack Jews, it's we need laws to protect the Jewish community. You know, maybe, I mean, I would rather it's just always that second option, right? I'm not actually mad at the Jewish community for wanting to protect itself. It's the discrepancy that's so infuriating. And of course, we saw this on just perfect display in the UK when there was an attack on the synagogue there a few months ago. And Keir Starmer comes out and is just immediately like, we stand with the Jewish community. You must feel safe here. We will stop anybody who's, you know, going to do this to you. We're beefing security around synagogues and Jewish schools. And it's like, okay, but when it's a white person attacked, it's we can't let hate spread. We can't let this rising tide of national, you know, white nationalism take us over. We have to crush any, you know, like parents, community members that are upset that their daughters were just slaughtered in cold blood by a foreigner that their country welcomed in here. They're the bad ones. They're the ones that have to be crushed. And it's so obvious now. I'm not sure how they're going to keep playing this. Like they can't keep doing this. People get it now. I think more and more people are coming to understand what we have InfoWars has been explaining forever. You have to be able to see this stuff with your own eyes. They're not going to tell you. Oh, yeah, here's the video. Oh, do you recognize him? Anybody recognize this guy? There he is. He's got two legs. If you know a human being with two legs, go ahead and give Brown University a call. You might know this guy. So let's go to clip number 5 here. Because again, like I said at the beginning of the show, the attack on Australia, the only lesson it should really be teaching us is that everything that they promised us would bring security was a lie. All of their policies aimed at crushing violence completely miss the actual violent people that will actually do the violence, but don't think for a single second that that will make anybody in Australia, at least not in the systems of power, rethink the supposed solutions they'd applied to violence in their communities 2-3 decades ago. Let's go to clip number 5 here.
Here's what happens next.
Recall the parliament and undertake to do exactly that.
The legislation that's been written to deal with this problem, it's being sent out to federal politicians and state politicians across the country right now. Some of them have already had it sitting in their inbox for weeks, maybe months. That legislation was written a long time ago, sitting there waiting for the right event. In 1996, after the Port Arthur massacre, the toughest legislation in the world for firearm ownership was passed through the Howard government. It had bipartisan support and John was considered a hero. Most legal and law-abiding firearms owners will tell you that it was draconian. And Australia was never the same again after that. This Bondi event is absolutely horrific and my heart is broken for my country today. Everyone knows that this is a turning point in Australia's history. For you millennials and Zoomers that have never been through something like this, those of us in Gen X, that remember this from 1996 can tell you exactly what happens. Things don't get better for you. Things will get worse for you. There will be crackdowns like you've never seen before. And then it will extend and graduate into right-wing politics and you will all be the enemy. I'm going to give you guys a heads up right now. You all need to tread really carefully because anything you post, anything you say, you will be in the firing line. Not literally, but you will be in the firing line and targeted by federal authorities going forward. This couldn't have happened at a worse time either. This will impact everything. And not only that, but over the Christmas break, while people are distracted, the emergency legislation will be passed.
And I give this undertaking to the Australian people. We will do whatever it takes to force the strongest possible action from governments.
Australia, you don't have a dog in this fight. This is Australia first and only first. There is no other culture, there is no religion, there is nothing that is important to you here other than Australia first. And if anything comes down the barrel that isn't Australia first, you know who's pulling the strings behind that. We all know. You can't hide what comes next. It's written plain as day. We've seen it play out around the world in multiple places. This is what happens. The legislation is already written. And that's the part that scares me the most about all of this. Australia first until I die.
They'd already written the legislation. They'd been waiting for an excuse to crack down on free speech. And, of course, that's exactly what they're doing. And we have Australian politicians already saying, you know, the real solution here to this problem is cracking down on right-wing activity, right-wingers. The people trying to keep Australia Australian are the ones who are now going to be cracked down on because they didn't listen to them and now 10 people have been slaughtered in cold blood, including a 10-year-old girl. I mean, what, you know, what are you supposed to do? I mean, what is it going to take before people realize that this whole multicultural adventure that they've sent us on was always a lie? This is always going to be the outcome. And Australia's getting it worse than just about everybody else. And, I mean, then we get into what's happening in Syria right now, where it's like, why does ISIS still even exist? Apparently, ISIS is taking credit for the shooting in Australia. So you've got an ISIS attack in Syria, where they kill 2 members of the National Guard, which shouldn't even be in the Middle East anyway. Nobody from America should be, but least of all the National Guard members, whose entire purpose is protecting the homeland. That's ridiculous. You would think that our successful overthrow of Bashar al-Assad after 15 years of continuous war in that country would have had some positive dividends, which would mean that we either wouldn't have to have people stationed in Syria or they would at least be safer than they were previously, but now they're less safe because ISIS was always against the Syrian regime. This is what doesn't make any sense. Al-Jolani, who's leading Syria, was an ISIS commander. He was Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and ISIS was always created by the American government. I mean, Trump said it during his first campaign. ISIS was created by Obama and Hillary. And it was. It was an offshoot of the CIA training moderate rebels. It's not a coincidence that ISIS battalions suddenly appeared in the desert just outside of CIA training camps, right where the moderate rebels were being armed. So America creates ISIS to overthrow Assad. And that's what it was about, and to take down Hezbollah. They resisted for 15 years. Finally, in the midst of this, you know, massive conflict with Iran and Israel, Assad's overthrown in 2 weeks because of this marauding, you know, battalion of barbarians out of Turkey led by Jolani, the Al-Qaeda Syria beheader-in-chief. He gets into Syria, is feted around the world as he's carrying out ethnic cleansing operations against the Druze and Christian sects that were protected under the Alawite administration of Bashar al-Assad. Meanwhile, Israel is taking, you know, chunks of Syria to the south. And the force that we created to take out Assad, the leader of which is now president of Syria, is now killing National Guardsmen and resurging, and also taking credit for an attack on Jews in Australia that Israel is blaming on Iran, even though Iran is Shia, not Sunni, not allied with ISIS. ISIS, who almost exclusively attacks other non-fundamentalist Muslim people, but have never attacked Israel or American, you know, forces to any degree. Something's not adding up here. Do you understand what I'm saying? That something's not adding up here? That not is as it seems? Like, this is a very complicated, multifaceted crystal of deception, but it's all deception. I'm not exactly sure what's coming from where. There have been reports, I don't know how credible they are, that the shooter in Australia may have, in fact, fought for the IDF at some point. But it's the type of thing that it's like, it sounds like an outrageous claim. Sound like it'd be a ridiculous oversight. If you're trying to plan a false flag, maybe don't use the guy who's, you know, in your uniform. But on the other hand, if it was true, I'm not surprised it's scrubbed from the internet. I mean, when you see the lengths to which the authorities in America, in cooperation with the people who run big tech, Google, Facebook, all of it, and the vested interest they have in protecting Israel in particular, if it was the case, like, why would we, how would we ever find out? It's not on Google. I mean, if you search the shooter's name, IDF, on Google, what you get is the, gee, results are changing quickly. We don't really know what's happening, so we're not going to give you any information. But, you know, it's kind of like the Charlie Kirk thing. It's kind of like all this stuff. It's like, well, I can have hunches about who I think did it, but I know that if I'm right, then we'll never have the evidence. It will never exist. The control mechanisms are too tight. The evidence of Mossad's participation in something will never come to light. It'll either be stopped by Mossad themselves or the intelligence networks here in America that take orders from Mossad, or it'll be stopped by somebody in big tech who's cooperating with the mafia that's organizing all of this, or it'll be, you know, shut down by the editor of the newsroom who decides that this story is a little too hot to handle, or maybe they're, you know, worried that it'll stop the big, you know, royal interview of Prince Harry. You know, right? I mean, this is how it works. This information will never come to light. So I never expect it to come to light. So I can't prove any of my suppositions, but perhaps this is a situation where the absence of evidence is in fact evidence. That's sort of the world that we're in now. It's confusing, but that's just how it works. That's just where we're at. We can go to clip 27 here. The audio is not great, but this is Trump addressing this ISIS attack on U.S. forces in Syria. Again, apologies for the poor audio, but this is, as far as I can tell, the only statement he's made about it since the news broke. Let's watch.
So we warned the law
three great patriots in Syria. You know how it happened, an ambush, terrible. We also have three wounded that seem to be doing pretty well. But we mourn the loss. These are great, three great people. And it's just a terrible thing. Syria, by the way, was fighting along with us. The president, the new president of Syria is, as they told me, and I'm not surprised, he's devastated by what happened. This was an ISIS attack on us and Syria. And again, we mourn the loss and we pray for them and their parents and their loved ones. Very, very sad.
Mr. President, will the U.S. retaliate against ISIS?
Yeah, we will.
And will the U.S. still retaliate?
Thank you very much.
All right, so that's Trump saying they'll retaliate against ISIS. I don't know. ISIS has always been kind of an Orwellian creation. Same thing with Al-Qaeda. You know, Al-Qaeda just means the database, right? It was a designation given by the CIA. Like, there was no group out there saying, we are the database. There was a bunch of people they designated as terrorists, had them in a database. They called it Al-Qaeda. So, same kind of thing with ISIS. It's like, well, what even is this? Where did it come from? Who funds it? Is this just now a permanent boogeyman that can constantly be reinvigorated, because it's not like they have any like real charismatic leaders. You can kind of say anybody's ISIS. Anybody can say they're ISIS. You can kind of just arm a bunch of Syrians, say you're now an ISIS, even though it's just CIA, Saudi Arabian trained operators. Like, what even is ISIS at this point? And why did it carry out two deadly attacks this weekend all of a sudden? Is this real? Is this really a thing? Apparently the shooter in Australia, the father and son shooters, had a ISIS flag in their car. If you, as Australia, have the tightest controls in the Western world, what Anglosphere, when it comes to communications and the internet and everything, if you have the tightest gun control and everything and you're not able to stop this, what do you have it for? What is the point of any of it? So I'm suspicious of all of this, and I'm worried about where it goes and what the catastrophes are going to permit the authorities to justify. As we know, the number one tool of the enemy, and it hasn't changed, and it seems like it's only gotten more aggressive, is problem, reaction, solution, creating crises to then present the solutions to this. And it seems like it's just on overdrive at this point. The crises are coming more and more rapidly and with more and more extremity. And yet, nobody seems to be doing anything to actually get to the root of the problem. Everybody uses every excuse possible to try to crush any nativist populist uprising or white people actually trying to defend themselves. It's pretty horrific. Tonight at midnight, folks, is your last chance to get 40% off every single product on thealexjonesstore.com. Tonight at midnight, December 15th, it ends. So make sure to order, you place your orders by tonight in order to receive them by Christmas. So if you want to do your Christmas shopping, go today to thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air in the fight and trying to, honest and highly informed way, navigate the dangerous waters of globalist machinations. We'll be right back.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. Be in the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a 357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, I have not yet begun to fight. And 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived? Hopefully we go past that with my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, if we don't have funds coming in December and January, there won't be money for payroll, there won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, Defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars, with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, Make No Peace with Evil, with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You can get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition, right now exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff to keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition, I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up, and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I've fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls for the second half of the show today. I usually just like taking calls about sort of anything and everything. So I know, I mean, I've got my mind on certain things, but I know that the audience probably has their mind on a lot of other stuff that we might not even be aware of. But I think I have a question that you might help me answer. I want to take calls on the questions, have we wasted the last 10 years? Or has this been an overall positive? It's been about 10 years since Trump came down the golden escalator. And it seems to me like at that point, going through the 2016 presidential election, it's like everybody was on board. It's like at that point, it was such a golden opportunity with Donald Trump blasting down the sort of controlled two-party system, defeating the Bushes and the Clintons, being ushered into office totally unexpectedly, on this populist message. He had all of the political cachet he could ask for and all of the proof he could ever need to dismantle the deep state. Here we are 10 years later. None of the people that we knew in 2016 were committing crimes in the deep state have been arrested. Populism has swept over the globe in a very powerful way. The example of Trump has been a potent one for populist leaders around the world. But what now? But where do we go from here? But what has actually been accomplished? That's my question. Have we wasted the last, has it been a waste? When the revelations of Peter Strzok and James Comey and Hillary Clinton, I mean, it was Pizzagate and satanic, you know, spirit cooking. And I mean, it all came out in 2016. And it seems like since then, it's just been more and more and more insane plots by the very same people. We keep catching them. We keep exposing it. And then nothing happens. So where do we go from here? So I'll give out the number. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Because you've got stuff like this from Mark Mitchell, Rasmussen Reports. He's commenting on a new poll from NBC News. The poll from NBC News says support for MAGA among Republicans is rapidly declining. Mark Mitchell's response is every Republican in D.C. will misinterpret this. And you know exactly what he means, right? We understand why support for MAGA is rapidly declining because it has failed. It is failing as we speak. It has absolutely nothing to do with people, you know, MAGA people becoming more left-wing. Literally the opposite. That's not how people in the Republican Party are going to interpret this. People in the Republican Party are going to interpret this as the storm is almost over. They'll have blue skies again in no time. The incredibly annoying idea of right-wingers who want things done, that the American people could have demands and you know, President Trump is giving people this illusion that the Republican Party could, if they wanted, actually do something. They are so eager for that to go away. They're so eager for the Bushes to come rushing back to the party, for people to see President Trump as this example of like, yeah, that's why populism doesn't work. It's stupid. It just causes a bunch of problems. Let's just go back to the way we were before. Bunch of Republican quislings tapping the brakes as we careen headlong off the progressive cliff. So what happens after Trump? We have this brilliant golden opportunity with Trump as this paradigm-destroying, mold-breaking dynamo of American politics. And it seems like he has been consumed by the swamp. It seems like he's now actively participating in the swamp madness. And it seems like the Republicans are doing everything they can to guarantee that nobody like Trump will ever rise again. So what is the purpose of the awakening? What is the purpose of the populist uprising if we just revert back to the status quo? It's almost worse than if it had never happened. Every politician in D.C., I think he's exactly right, will misinterpret the disappointment with MAGA, and they'll act on that, and they'll run a bunch of milquetoast, lukewarm Republicans who will apologize for Trump's positions, thinking that this is going to play well in the polls because they're just that delusional. Their worldview is just that inverted. And then the Republicans will lose outright, completely. They'll continue to blame it on Trump. And the Democrats will take power and just go absolutely nuts. So we'll talk about that as the crew lines up calls. But I do want to talk about Europe. So before we get into Europe, just as a final thought when it comes to Trump and, you know, what the hell's going on here. We have this story from Fugitive Caesar. Something like 72% of STEM graduates can't find a STEM job this week. But this week we're cutting deals with Indian CEOs at IBM to bring in more Indian tech workers. So there's Trump sitting next to this character, this Indian guy, as we cut more deals to sell out the American birthright to India, as Amazon sends $35 billion over there to train their people, and Microsoft sends $17.5 billion into India to train their people. We get nothing. We get absolutely nothing. And the guy that he's talking to is the very same CEO that was caught on a leaked Zoom call telling IBM senior management that they are to be hiring no white guys, regardless of qualifications, for any position in any of their divisions. This person goes on to say, if Trump, this dumb boomer, deserves to lose, I bet he doesn't look so tough in his next mugshot. I don't think he deserves to lose. I don't want him in any way to fail in the mission that we have given him. But I can't help but agree. So this is the IBM CEO. Let's go to clip number 12 here. This is Trump sounding off on what has been done to white people over the last couple of years. Let's watch.
This video that was leaked to O'Keefe of Krishna, the CEO of IBM, telling his employees to hire fewer white men or they will be punished. Their pay will be cut. Watch this.
Yeah, I'm very clear about this. I expect at the executive level, so that is not just my directs, but all executives in the company have to move forward by 1% on both underrepresented minorities. But let me say it, Asians in the U.S. are not an underrepresented minority in a tech company. However, others are. Ditto on gender diversity. So we take underrepresented and gender. You got to move both forward by a percentage. That leads to a plus on your bonus. By the way, if you lose, you lose part of your bonus.
So how did an immigrant to this country wind up supporting racial fascism? It's a great question, and one that we should think deeply about as tens of millions of new immigrants pour across our...
So there you go. That's the IBM chief saying that, you know, you would have your bonuses withheld if you dared to hire a white guy. Or an Asian person, for that matter. You would get bonuses for diversifying the people beneath you. In other words, everybody except for straight white Christian guys. And that guy is sitting next to Trump making a deal, despite the fact that 72% of STEM graduates cannot find a job in America with their degree. Isn't that something else? Compact Magazine's come out with a huge story on this, The Lost Generation. Basically talking about how white people have just been deliberately excluded from absolutely everything. And he makes a great point in saying that, you know, they decided around 2014, 15, 16, that, you know, they needed to diversify the corporate world. But they didn't start off with firing the old boomers that were there. They just stopped hiring young white people. So while it would still be despicable, I'd still be against it. It at least would make some sense to be like, okay, this industry is too white male. Let's get rid of some of the people that have been here for 40 or 50 years. Still despicable, don't get me wrong. Less despicable than the old boomers themselves who have been in the industry 40 or 50 years saying, yeah, from now on, I mean, I still need my job because I'm going to diversify. I'm going to stop hiring the young white guys. I'm going to limit the ability of young people to replicate my success and my jaunt up the career ladder. I'm going to pull the ladder up after me to stop them from being hired. And I'll do that so I can keep my cushy job as an aging boomer who now apparently has discovered how bad your own people are. It's just despicable. And we can get into some of these stats, but I do want to move on to Europe because Europe is in a kind of hilarious pickle right now where they are trying to start a war, but they have no army. They're trying to recruit their citizens who they spent the last several decades demonizing as much as humanly possible. they're trying to go to war with a country that provides their energy while simultaneously detonating with TNT every nuclear power plant they still have left on the continent. They are seemingly insane unless you understand their real motives. None of this makes any sense if you take them at their word. If instead you just understand by the power of your own observation that the goal of the European elite is in fact the eradication of the European people, then none of this is confusing at all. It actually all perfectly aligns and is the best thing for them to do right now. Let me repeat. They're insane if they think that they can fight a war with Russia. They're insane if they think they even should. And I got a lot of videos to show you about this. But let's start with clip number 14. I almost made this joke the other day, but everybody who follows history knows this. But one of our guests, I can't remember exactly who it was talking about the age of the average soldier in Ukraine, something like 48 years old. And at the time I'm thinking, well, as long as they're not enlisting 13-year-olds, it's not as bad as it could be. Yeah, European leaders propose multinational force and hail significant progress on Ukraine talks. Right now, they're threatening to try to crash the U.S. economy if we dare to pull out of Ukraine. They're so desperate for this war. Let's go to clip 14 here, because while, yes, the Ukraine government has been throwing 45-year-olds into vans to send them to the front line to die, they've not yet lowered their conscription age, which is the sign that you've lost, essentially, by the time the Russians were invading Germany in World War II. German lines were staffed with 12 and 13-year-olds. And Ukraine may soon be getting there. At least they will be if warmonger extraordinaire John Bolton has anything to say about it. Let's go to clip number 14 here. Here he is, the despicable neocon scumbag himself, John Bolton, calling for a lowering of the recruitment age in Ukraine.
I don't think so. I think Ukraine, as Great Britain during World War II, has a very good argument. You can't have elections in wartime, especially in Ukraine's case when you've got the foreign invader occupying 20% of the country. If you were going to be fair about this, you'd have free and fair elections in Russia, too. We know that's not going to happen. So I think Ukraine needs to do more to show the fight against corruption continues. You can probably have local elections in places where the Russians aren't occupying. And I think this is advice from a friend. I think they need to lower their draft age from 25 to 18 to get more manpower on the battlefield and to make sure that the country as a whole is bearing the burden of this war equally.
Conscription age for men is 25, lowered from 27 in April 2024. Now, their good friend John Bolton is suggesting, why don't you go after the 18-year-olds? Hell, there are people that, you know, were children when the war started. They're old enough to recruit now. I mean, it's just a million Ukrainian men have died. An entire generation of Ukrainians have been wiped out. Country's population has gone down by like 50% during the war. Somebody that doesn't want to be involved has to flee. The only people left there are the people who can't afford to leave and are being, again, thrown into conscription vans to be fed into the meat grinder, or the ultra wealthy that are making hundreds of millions of dollars off American taxpayers by literally selling their own people like pieces of meat. And now John Bolton is like, what if we go after the young adults too? There's still plenty of manpower there, plenty of meat to be ground up in service of Moloch. So let's get to it. I mean, after all, the more Ukrainians die, the higher the BlackRock, Goldman Sachs profits are. The more Ukrainian men they can liquidate, the more space for African migrants there are. Okay? John Bolton knows what he's talking about. This, of course, is the absurdity of Europe. A continent that has systematically destroyed its own people, that has invited millions of hostile foreigners who carry out terrorist attacks to an insane degree, to the point where major European cities aren't even having Christmas celebrations because they know that they will be attacked by migrants and there's nothing they can do to stop it, so they just aren't having the Christmas celebrations. And then they turn around and say, you have to go die to protect your country. It's not their country. You've sold their country out. You have sold them out. You've sold their sisters out and their mothers out. And you want them to go die? Again, if you go by what they're saying, it makes no sense. If instead you understand their ultimate goal is destruction of the European people, then bringing in 10 million Muslims to rape them to death or sending them all to die on a godforsaken frozen field in Russia are in fact perfectly aligned. So there's no contradiction whatsoever, actually. And really, it's just up to whether the European people recognize this and are able to resist the propaganda. And it is just unbelievably offensive. Yeah, they aren't even doing New Year's Eve in Paris because the migrants would attack it. They have been conquered, okay? It really is so, like, crazy that out of the, something like a German government, everything is out of them is like, German people are to be despised, they're awful, anybody loving Germany. I mean, you remember when Angela Merkel was first chosen to lead the chancellorship, like during her inauguration, one of her lieutenants has a German flag and she rips it out of his hand and throws it on the floor. They literally hate their own people, only to turn around and go, Germans, we need you to go fight Russia. It's so cynical. The only time they will even pretend to appreciate European people, the European race, is when they are encouraging them to go kill themselves. Whether it's posters about sterilization, the only time you'll see a white family portrayed in the media. Euthanasia, the only time you'll see white people in media. Yeah, this is it. Literally throwing the German flag on the ground, ripping it out of her lieutenant's hand, out of embarrassment, shaking her head. The German flag of the country she's supposed to represent. And then they're going to turn around and say, hey, white German people, you need to go die to protect your country. It's ballsy. I'll give them that. Let's start with Germany. Let's go to clip number 10 here. Germany really worried about their manpower problem. Yeah, Jay, I wonder why.
Despite the uptick in enlistments, the Bundeswehr faces a manpower challenge. It wants to add about 75,000 active duty troops to its all-volunteer force by 2035. History weighs on recruitment. The issue still sparks protests. A recent poll found an overwhelming majority of 15 to 25-year-olds would not take up arms. If volunteer numbers fall short, the government may reintroduce the draft. Soldiers we met in basic training told us they find the reluctance of their generation to volunteer troubling.
I think a lot of it must have to do with the history of World War II.
Yes, of course.
Private Lasse told us he's proud to serve.
Nobody wants to go to war, but if it happens, you have to be there to defend your country.
Okay, well, why don't you send some of those new Germans? Remember you made the magazines with the picture of the Afghan family and you wrote the new Germans on it? Why don't the new Germans go fight? Well, they're just as German as everybody else. How about you start with the new Germans first? After all, we can't trust these white German people. We saw last time they were allowed to, you know, fight. It got bad. It got real bad. So let's just how about all of the millions and millions of people you brought over? Because it seems like what you're asking is for all of the people in Germany and the UK and France, all of the white people that are continually abused by their own government, should now be packed up and sent off to Siberia to die in a war with Russia, while all of the Muslims that have been, you know, raping and assaulting them get to stay and basically inherit their country while the rest of them are killed. Yeah, it seems like what you're doing here. Yeah, these are the new Germans. Go get them. Go ask them. And again, just like, you know, the warning signals that America is, you know, falling out of love with MAGA it makes the Republicans be like, oh, that's because they don't like populism. They want responsible governments again, where we talk about the budget and our country is stolen out from under us. Completely wrong interpretation. Same thing's happening here. They're like, it's because the Germans are embarrassed about World War II. It's like if Germany was Nazi, they probably wouldn't have a recruitment problem, actually. Actually, it's because of the systematic denazification of Germany that has left them literally suicidal and embarrassed of their own existence. You expect them to go defend an institution, the German state, that you have repeatedly drilled into their brains is evil? What? Why would they do that? Why would they go fight for that? And on the other hand, if you are actually a German nationalist, if you are actually proud of your heritage and your people, why would you go fight for the very government that is systematically destroying you? Duh. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Britain's in the same boat and just as delusional as Germany. Let's watch.
David Clues here. So I just thought I'd make this video with the ongoing efforts of the British establishment to prepare people for war. I mean, when you first look at it, the whole concept is just ridiculous. We don't have an army, we don't really have a navy, we don't have an air force, but they're acting like we do. Second of all, do we really have an enemy? Well, I would argue our enemy sits in 10 Downing Street in the corridors of power, and the ones we don't see either, they're the ones pulling the strings for our real enemy. But they're coming up with this fantasy threat that it's Russia, and Russia's threatening Britain. So they've deployed the entire apparatus of the British state, MPs, the media, now head of MI6, they're all coming out and doing it. So the question is this just a ruse to try and get more money for the military-industrial complex, or do they mean it? And I actually think they do mean it. I think there probably will be some form of skirmish or something even worse with Russia by the 2030s or earlier. Because why would they lie about it? They said they were going to have a scamdemic, and they did. So why would they be lying about this? The key thing to remember is they're having a meltdown because they're saying people on the British right aren't patriots. They don't want to fight for their country. Well, this is a country that's been importing 1 million foreigners every year for the last 15 years plus more. 15 million years. 15 million people and the rest. And they think we're all going to go out and fight illegal immigrants as well. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. The country's breaking down around us, and they think we're going to go and fight for it. I think we all of us have to say, get lost. Speak to you later.
Yeah, get lost would be the nicest way you could say that. I'm just going to reiterate it. We should be running guns. We should be running guns to European patriots in every one of their countries. If we can overthrow Bashar al-Assad, we can't overthrow Keir Starmer. Come on, give me a break. There are people out there that really do need freedom delivered. They're begging for it.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue. Possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best. Every military analyst from China, Russia, the RAND Corporation, the Pentagon, no one disagrees. The International Atomic Association of Scientists with their doomsday clock in Chicago. It is the closest to nuclear war we've ever been on the threat escalation ladder.
We have a plan. We know what to do. So let us deliver. We must.
We will, of course, continue working closely with our partners in NATO. This is a moment for Europe, and we are ready to step up.
The Secretary General of NATO warning about the prospect of war, and he put it in really stark terms. He said, we are Russia's next target, and we are already in harm's way. And you sort of wonder why he's saying that now, and it's partly about a message to European people. You do need to spend money on defense, yes, but also getting people ready psychologically as well. Yeah.
Now we are dealing with the third form of totalitarianism. This time it is liberal totalitarianism. So they are going to sacrifice everything, any normal rational interests, any normal values, in order to promote their crazy maniac agenda.
He said a short while ago, in some previous comments earlier, that we must be prepared for the scale of war our grandparents or great-grandparents endured.
We all agree that Ukraine is our first line of defense. We have to step up the military support for Ukraine.
Unelected dictatorship, Ursula von der Leyen. Allied with the British Empire, that's the modern Hitler. The real thing, that is psychotic megalomania. That will get us all killed. That's the number one threat on Earth right now. This witch.
I want the leader of the European Union, which is now Ursula von der Leyen, to be democratically elected, because now he's not elected. She comes inside the European Parliament and we say yes or no, but I think it's more of a show than actually a vote, because she makes deals with all the political parties from before to vote.
The real problem, it is the nuclear fight, war between Russia and United States of America. That is the last call. That is apocalypse. That is Armageddon. If we could limit, if we could reduce this danger, this threat to European Union, and if United States will stay out of it, I think that is the main reason why nuclear war will not happen.
Number one, the war is won. Russia has won. If you want to stop the bleeding, if you want to have some sort of impact on how much further the Russians go in terms of absorbing territory, then sit down and admit that the war is over, that they've won, and hammer out some sort of solution. Because if you don't, this nonsense sponsored by MI6, the CIA, and Mossad in Kiev is going to continue. And as it continues, the Russians will move forward until they're confident that they have secured enough space, not just territory, but space, frankly, that allows them to feel secure as a nation.
That Russia is not going to attack Europe. It's funny for us. It's laughable because we never wanted to attack Europe. Okay, let's put it in writing. But there are some people who are not particularly, shall we say, with us. I don't know, there may be some crooks when everything is being fed to the society and the citizens are scared and they want to hear that we don't have any aggressive plans towards Europe.
Our own GOP senators that are coming out against it. Let me give you a wild guess as to where they are personally invested with in regards to their stock portfolios. You guessed it.
Trump's got to take the gloves off. Don't just leave NATO. Break up the EU. There's all these states that don't want to be under it. Most of them didn't even vote to get in it. It literally was set up as a trade deal scam, Treaty of Rome in 56. Point out it's unelected. point out they're killing all these AFD candidates, point out it's the new Hitler, and just break it up. We can do this. We have a new product in at theellisshowstore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity with no letdown and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, it can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, TheAlexShowStore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this and then looking at how they're organically derived and how each ingredient itself is a game changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at TheAlexShowStore.com.
Now, back to our program.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room. We're going to go out to your phone calls here. Just before we do, I was talking about Europe before we closed out, and I want to explain another phenomenon that happens to me when I'm news gathering. I'll see a video, and I have no idea what it's expressing. I'm just like, what? And like all, half the comments are like, this is AI. I go to Grok, try to figure out what's going on. And it's like, you're suddenly unveiled. I mean, a rabbit hole really is the right term for it. Where you just, you think, oh, there's a little divot in the lawn. And then it's like, no, there's actually like a giant warren underneath, with all these different tones. So I didn't even know this was going on. Then I find this video, see this video on my timeline of a French guy who looks like he's crying blood. Like weeping about being abused by the French government. And it's like, what the hell is even going on? So I did some research. I found out what's going on. We'll go to the video first. The 9-second video here. I accidentally crossed it off. Which one? Number 9. Yes, here's a French farmer, blood in his eye, protesting against the government, which is killing all of their cows, apparently. Let's watch.
Regardez comme ils nous traitent, ils nous prennent tout. On n'a plus rien, on est traités comme des moins que rien. C'est nous qui nourrissons les Français, c'est nous. Et regardez ce qu'on subit.
So I don't know how we got blood in his eye, but the translation is essentially they're abusing us. You know, what did we do? We are the people that feed France, and look at how they're abusing us. I'm just like, what the hell is this about? French farmers vowed to continue stop the slaughter protests. French farmers on Monday. Today, vowed not to let up their protest against the mass slaughter of cows to control an infectious bovine disease, promised to keep going until Christmas unless the coal is ended. Many breeders have been incensed by the use of police force and the government's mass slaughter policy to stop the spread of nodular dermatitis, also known as lumpy skin disease. Farmers are also upset that the European Union this week is expected to sign on a trade deal with South America that they say will flood the market with cheap products that will outcompete them. Agricultural workers have blocked the roads since vets on Friday slaughtered a herd of more than 200 cows in a village near the Spanish border after discovering a single case of the disease. Police used tear gas to clear away the angry demonstrators protecting the cattle in Le Bordes sur Aris. Apologies for trying to speak French. So they've been blocking roads and protesting for weeks, and there's this disease called lumpy skin disease that I guess affects cows but doesn't affect humans. And they basically have just said, the French government has said, you know, we want to stop this disease, so if any cow is discovered to have the disease, we're killing all of your cows. And it just seems like they are culling cows for yet another reason. It's like, I can't even think of all the reasons that Europe has given for why they're just systematically eliminating their agricultural and farming industries, but that's just what they're doing. It's just like, oh, it's about emissions, it's about cow farts, it's about actually it's about nitrogen in the soil, actually it's about lumpy skin disease, actually it's about bird flu, and it's just like at every pass they're just systematically destroying the ability of Europe to feed itself. It's not a coincidence that all these things are happening. So again, it's just we try to focus on so many different things. We try to keep our eye on so many different balls, different plates spinning here, and then you just totally miss. It's like, oh, and by the way, you don't know this, but for weeks the French government has been systematically killing every cow they can get their hands on, and the French farmers are trying to stop them and being abused in the process. Okay, great. So the genocide continues. With that, we got to your calls. Thank you so much for calling and holding, everybody. Let's go to Jeffrey in Ohio first. Of course, the question I asked for our callers was, have we wasted the last decade? We got the uprising. It is here. The scales have been lifted. The veil has been torn. And everything is worse. How did that happen? Jeffrey in Ohio, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Nice to talk to you again, buddy. Just to clarify, too, I am not in Ohio. I'm an Idahoan.
Idaho. Thank you.
No offense. No worries. But, yeah, I was just responding to your initial conversation point that you were trying to bring up, which is, are we in a better place than we were 10 years ago, or are we headed in the right direction, if that's what I believe you were asking,
yeah,
right?
More
is
or
that
less.
Kind of what I got?
Yeah.
So I'm like a 42-year-old guy with two kids. So when I started this whole political run, my kids were very young, and there was a lot of – I grew up in California, lived in California up until 2 years ago. And so I would say, you know, I was very pessimistic about where we were. But I think the more that I start to see the youth mature, and we're starting to see more of these younger men come up, and they're starting to talk a lot more like the way I did when I was in high school.
Right.
And so I think in a weird way, I feel like these young kids that are growing up, they're going to naturally rebel. And so there was this period of time where it wasn't okay to be a certain type of man. Mm-hmm. And now it's more like, I think this next generation is like, no, we're not going to do this anymore. Even my son, he's 11, and he makes points all the time that I never thought he would be making observational comments about, like the communities we live in, the people running the media. I mean, the fact that our youth is aware of like the global stuff that we weren't is kind of what I'm getting at. Like it took me being 30 to wake up to the J and to wake up to the global elites and all this stuff. I mean, my son's 11 and him and his friends talk about this stuff at school. So, I mean,
so
I think in a weird.
Yeah. So that's, well, that's really interesting because that has been a major change. Is it's like it used to be that you had to be a certain type of person. You had to go out of your way to find this information. We were talking about it on Moonbase last week because, you know, in a weird way, there was a natural filter where websites like 4chan, where people would post this stuff, were so just offensive on the eyes, right? Like any normie that would go there would just immediately click out because like you could just see it's gross, it's weird, it's offensive, and like, there was just, you had to be a certain type of person that would just shrug that type of stuff off, because hidden within all of the insanity were nuggets of truth and you had to go out and find it. So the difference now is that people are growing up knowing this stuff. Whereas, you know, like I was red pilled, you know, much younger than most people, but now it's all like coming at once. And that in and of itself, it's like, okay, it's good that people are waking up, but with everybody getting the deluge of information all at once, getting, you know, it took me 20 years to research, they're getting it in 3 months, and it's like breaking their brains and making people just, you know, go crazy. So that's all an aspect of this, Jeffrey, is like, is it good that people are waking up so rapidly, or is that just going to make them go crazy, or, you know, be even more susceptible to the lies in the future? So that's interesting. And that's definitely I think that's a positive that young people growing up are hyper aware of this stuff.
I agree, and that's the thing. Is like my son, he's observing this stuff on his own. Like I was a proud boy. Trust me. Like I started off as a MAGA-tard, and then I moved into the PBs, and then I became a white nationalist, and I became, you know, whatever you call me now, which is more of an independent. But my son, him just being an observational 11-year-old kid, the conversations he comes home and tells me his friends are talking about on the playgrounds are not conversations that I would have ever expected. You know, like right. I'm thinking Pokemon and like Transformers and stuff. I gave my son a ride home today with his friend, and he's asking me if Hitler was really as bad as he should, as they're telling him in school. And he's like, I thought that he was this evil person. And he goes, but the more I look into it, he doesn't seem – and this is an 11-year-old kid asking me questions about a guy that has been portrayed in such a negative light that where they're asking, man, is this possible? Like – is this, and I said, just think about this. If Trump is portrayed as Hitler today, how would you think that they're going to defend, how can people defend Hitler 90 years later, right?
One of my favorite sayings, today's fake news becomes tomorrow's unquestionable history. That's, that's the path it takes. No, it's, look, the awakening is on, and there's not a lot that can be done to stop it. And like I've said a million times, when it comes to something like Hitler, if you, like, yeah, intelligent, inquisitive people are going to see information missing, right? If you go, oh, the German people just all of a sudden woke up, were tricked by this guy Hitler, were evil for a couple years, and then snapped out of it. It's like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. So what am I missing? What are you not telling me? And they're going to go look for that. And surprise, surprise, the only people telling the other side of the story are the fervent Hitler lovers. So they're going to get that, you know, perspective. When if this was all just treated like it's supposed to be, your kid wouldn't be confused or have questions. It all makes sense, actually, why the German people would gravitate to Hitler, why he acted the way that he did, why he's portrayed as he is now. Like, it's actually not all that confusing, and it's irresponsible to lie to children about this for their whole lives. They're going to realize it if they're smart. Wow, very interesting stuff, Jeffrey. So it sounds to me like Jeffrey's saying the awakening in and of itself is monumental and good. Overall, would that be a fair assessment, Jeffrey? I'm going to move on to another caller, but a good thing that this is happening.
Yes, Harrison, I would say it's an amazing thing, and I just want to say God bless you, dude, for doing an amazing job helping Alex and continuing to fight, okay? And so, again, just God bless you, Broham, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and God bless all of you out there. Christ is King.
Well, thank you very much, and congratulations on your kid. It sounds like he's going to go very far, and congratulations on getting out of California and into Idaho, not as somebody bringing California with them, but as somebody who recognizes what they were escaping. Let's go now to, this is actually a great comparison. Here's Alan, who's in California and thinks that we have wasted the last decade. So, Alan, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Harrison Smith, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Well, you're the man, the myth, the legend. And I'm so glad that call came in front of me. So I'm very happy for that young man. And I'm a much older man. In fact, my son is probably the same age or older than that young man who's in Idaho. And, you know, I've struggled with this because we, as being born and bred and born in California over 60 years ago, you know, you never like to run away from a fight. Does that make sense?
Of course.
So here's the thing, and I'm very pleased, but in a way we've wasted the last 10 years because we keep just not fighting the battle. This brings me back to earlier in your show today. And by the way, as a bit of a sidebar, I was the last call that you had on September 9th, Tuesday, the day before Charlie got executed, Charlie Kirk got executed. If you go back to your archives, I was the last call. And I called in, and we only had a few – we had like not even 90 seconds, and you said, I'd like to talk to you again, Alan. And I wanted to call in the next day, but then, of course, Charlie Kirk was executed, and I used that word for a specific reason.
Right.
Okay?
Well, I'm glad you've called in now.
Thank you for that. The point is, I was about to tell you that day on 9-9 Tuesday that we were going into a civil war in America. Time, Charlie Kirk, this Robinson kid, he was not shot with a .30-06. in my humble opinion, what I've spent, because I'm retired now, and all I spend is time going into this. And you should look up, and I would encourage yourself and anybody else listening, Baron Coleman on YouTube. He's a lawyer out of Tennessee. He's done a huge deep dive. There's, in my opinion, about a lot of reasons to believe that there was a hit on him. He was executed electrically. I'll just leave it at that. And this all dovetails into what happened in Sydney, Australia over the weekend, and all the anti-Semitism push and everything. There is a civil war being pushed in this country and in all the Western countries right now. And it comes back to the prior caller, which, God bless him, I'm glad he's in Idaho and his 11-year-old son's doing a great job. But it grieves my heart that we're sitting here thinking that these 11-year-old kids were going to, you know, we're happy about their eyes opening and awaking. That's great. But me as a man in my 60s, I thank the Lord that my son is a law enforcement. I'll leave it at that. My brother-in-law's law enforcement. They told me, that's why I called you on 99. They said, we have a civil war coming. 2026 is going to be extremely bad. And 2027 is going to be worse, because that's when the war is going to kick off with China and Russia. And I just get so annoyed, as much as I've voted for Trump every time, multiple times, I mean, legally, he doesn't draw the hammer down. He's too busy making deals with his son-in-law, Kushner, and Qatar, and all this, and the tariffs. Sometimes you got to drop the hammer. Okay, if the stock market, which will hurt me too, will drop a significant amount, sometimes you got to take the bitter medicine to get to a better, to cure the disease. Does that make sense? I'll be quiet now and let you respond.
Absolutely, that makes sense. And, you know, your comment reminded me of this comment from Classical Theist that I meant to bring up today anyway, because I think he sort of hit the nail on the head here. It's in response to Donald Trump sort of going after Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner was murdered, and he basically says he had Trump derangement syndrome. And it looks like, this isn't quite the time to celebrate Trump. And Classical Theist, in response to this, says, when Trump delivers on nothing and throws his core supporters under the bus, the only thing you're left with are the vices and character flaws that you were originally forced to tolerate for the sake of perceived greater good. I think that's kind of a brilliant interpretation. It's like, yeah, he's always kind of a jerk. He always would, you know, snap at people. And it was like, you know, usually it's funny. Usually it's actually the people deserve it. So it's not even like a bad thing anyway. But, you know, if you're worried about the, you know, political atmosphere becoming a little bit, you know, impolite, you go, well, you know, he's not the most polite. I don't like how he talks, but he gets things done, but he's a fighter, but he's going to work with us. And then it's like, okay, but if we're not getting anything, if he's not succeeding in all the ways that he should be, and he's still being very fractious like this, very rough around the edges, it's a lot more difficult to justify and be okay with. And again, it seems like they're recognizing that their lack of action is driving people away, and then they think they can just do a bunch of really hardline rhetoric, and that's going to help. And it's just like, I think more people are getting on board with where I've been for a while, which is like, you guys need to stop talking and start doing. I don't want to hear anymore. Steve Miller over the weekend had something where it was like, Trump has said he's going to step in and stop all the H-1B visas or whatever. And it's like, okay, do it then. If you do it, you don't have to say you're going to do it. And every time you say you're going to do something, it just makes me think you're never going to actually do it, because if you're actually going to do it, you would just do it. But telling us you're going to do it means to me you want the benefits of doing something. You want people to celebrate it as if you've done it, but then you never actually do it. So what is the point anymore? Why are you talking? Why are you saying all of this stuff that you never actually do? So yeah, it's very frustrating. Thanks so much for the call, Alan. I do appreciate that. And the Civil War. The whole problem with the idea of a civil war is the fact that we have China and Russia and all of these enemies around the world waiting for our guard to go down. Like that, and again, we've been saying this for 5 years, of just like, if America goes into a state of civil war, the left faction, whatever that looks like, whatever, however that manifests, will not hesitate a single moment to beg international forces to rush into America. Plus, they have all of their networks seated here over 4 years of completely unrestricted immigration, in which you saw thousands and thousands of clearly highly trained Chinese operatives coming into the United States, some of them even caught, you know, sending messages back to China, spying on military installations, all sorts of stuff. So it's like, okay, if we become vulnerable, they will wipe us out. So civil war is like kind of never an option, which is why a political solution is absolutely necessary. Not just preferable, necessary. Which is why, you know, I said earlier this week, people were saying, you know, here's what happens if the Democrats get back in charge. Filibuster ended, pack the Supreme Court, get rid of the guns, get rid of free speech, start arresting political dissidents. Like, it might actually be preferable to go to civil war while we are in power. If Trump had balls, if he really was a Caesar 2.0, then he would use the U.S. military to shut down all of the bubbling up civil war activity and set us right, and we could actually survive and not become vulnerable to outside forces. But we need the government to actually act on behalf of Americans. If they don't, it's up to us, and the whole thing becomes a chaotic mess. So we're in a civil war. Only one side's fighting, our side, which actually has, you know, it's like, who was I talking to? I was talking to a guest here, and it was when, I think it was when TPUSA was being attacked by Antifa. I think I was talking to Stuart Rhodes, and it was like, you see a gang, a mob street gang of leftists, and my impulse is to be like, where's our street gang? Where are the Proud Boys? Where are the Oath Keepers? If they have street gangs, we need street gangs. But then you think about it and you go, well, wait, if the factions are radical lefty anti-American scum versus America, patriots, MAGA, law enforcement, then like our gang is the United States government. If we need to come together to protect ourselves with force, we have an institution for that. It's called the government of the United States military, and our law enforcement. That's supposed to be our team. Their team can be the rabble-rousers. They can be the radical anarchists trying to burn things down. Our team is supposed to be the duly impaneled and, you know, appropriately authorized monopolizers of force in this country, and we're supposed to use them as if they're our team to defend us against our enemies, who are the Antifa people. We don't need a gang of rabble running around fighting their gang of rabble. We need to use the power that we have because we won the election, and that's what's determined who has power in the country. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. We're going to go out to your phone calls more on the other side. I do want to remind you, you are running out of time rapidly. You only have a few hours left to take advantage of the biggest sale we've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. 40% off absolutely everything in the store. And you want to order it by tonight, not only to get the 40% off discount, but also to make sure it arrives by Christmas. Do your Christmas shopping today. It is the final day for this incredible, unprecedented sale where you're saving 40% off absolutely everything site-wide. No code needed. You've got to place your orders by tonight, December 15th, in order to receive them by Christmas. Go check out the Ultramethylene Blue. Ultramethylene Red is back in stock as well. Those two together are an absolute powerhouse. Of course, each of them alone is a powerhouse, but they're designed to work synergistically. Methylene Red boosting Ultramethylene Blue. Some people take medication. They can't take Ultramethylene Blue. So Ultramethylene Blood, Red is there. You can take that, and it doesn't have the same, you know, medical conflicts as Ultramethylene Blue does. So don't miss out, folks. This offer ends tonight, December 15th. Visit thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Fuel your body, mind, and support us as we charge into the future. Hopefully not leading a contingent in the Civil War, but I guess we will if we have to.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. Being the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a 357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, I have not yet begun to fight. And 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived. Hopefully we go past that with my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, we don't have funds coming in December and January. There won't be money for payroll. There won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, Defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars, with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, Make No Peace with Evil, with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You can get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition right now, exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff, keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition, I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up, and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, folks, welcome back. We got a lot of calls still rolling in, answering the question of, have we wasted the last 10 years or not? Yeah, I'm not even blaming Trump, because Trump was the catalyst to all of this, right? Without Trump's run, we'd be in the third term of President Hillary Clinton by this point. And I would have been in jail or incinerated somewhere. So it's not like it's a bad thing this has happened. It's just, I was just thinking about, like, Yeah, we're in a place now where we should be rapidly rounding up all the deep state. But like that was the position in 2016. 2016, we had the critical mass of the number of people aware of just how evil our deep state was. And Trump, with all of the impetus he ever needed to tear it all apart. And we sort of gave him leeway in the first administration because it was so stacked against him and the deep state was so entrenched. I didn't expect him to, clean the whole thing out. But now here we are a year into his second administration, 10 years after he first goes down the golden escalator, and it doesn't seem like he's doing a tenth of what he should be. And I wonder if we're not, being set up for just abject, abysmal failure. And we got a lot of people, a lot of different views on this. So we'll go first to Will in California, and then we'll go to Tony in New Jersey after this. So stay on the line, Tony. Will in California first. Go ahead, Will, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, good to talk to you. Miss you in the mornings, but love you in the afternoons.
Thank you for following me over.
Absolutely, man. If we've learned anything over these last 10 years, it's that personnel is over policy. And Trump said it himself. Susie Wiles is the most powerful person in the world. She could start a war with a phone call. But also more recently, Trump said, she said Trump doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be campaigning like it's 2024. But if he's out stumping for Republican candidates, he won't be focusing on his own political agenda. And he may even potentially cost Republican seats if his poll numbers fall any farther. He's often hidden also in his true social echo chamber, tweeting out insult posts, chasing away critical thinkers like MTG and Massey, etc. But, he seems so disconnected, and Susie has him bubble wrapped. She's admittedly in charge with ties to corporate lobbying still, and Bibi's 2020 campaign. She creates the bubble that no America-only candidate can ever penetrate. It's sad for the American taxpaying citizens, but we must continue to demand accountability. It's personnel is policy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not sure if you saw my coverage, but I was pretty incensed at what Susie Wiles was saying. I tweeted it out saying Susie Wiles plans to have Trump campaign across the country for Republicans in 2026. So she'll run Trump ragged, crisscrossing the country, completely distracting him from his presidential duties while campaigning for Republicans who do nothing but stab him in the back anyway. So I agree. I think this is really unacceptable. And again, sort of shocked and outraged. She's like, he doesn't know this yet, but we've scripted his whole next year for him. And it's just like, but why? It's like we have the Congress and the Senate right now, and they're doing absolutely nothing for him. So I don't even see the point of campaigning for these people anyway. Should be using that time and energy, not putting himself out there where, and again, it's like the challenges of Secret Service doing this. I bet they're even going to like try to sue him over this. If I was a Democrat, I'd be going, so the president is going to be using American taxpayer dollars to campaign for his political friends, like, this is unprecedented. We're going to sue to stop him from using Secret Service resources to go city to city. I wouldn't be surprised if they even did that. So, again, it's just like nothing but trouble, nothing but problems. So I tend to agree with you. Now, Tony in New Jersey has a different view. Thank you for the call, Will. Tony in New Jersey on line 10 says Trump is doing it all right. And I've heard this argument a lot. So lay it out for me, Tony. What is Trump doing that's impressing you so much?
Harrison Hill, it's just real complicated, the whole thing. It's taken a long, long time. I think the first time when he was in, he went to over 200 countries. And I think they're all on the same page as us. And this is happening on a global scale. So it's going to take time. And, why is this person not taken out? Why is that person still in? I think because he needs the leverage. And that's why he keeps people in.
Okay, so
and
you think, you think he's sort
think
of setting everything in place for a big grand finale, or what do you think? How do you think this is going to play out?
Yes, I think it's going to happen in a big way, like a really big way, and everybody's, preparing for it, and they say there's, certain people are you know, playing parts and all this stuff going on, central casting and all that. And, you know, a lot of it, I think, is true because it's a difficult, you know, scary game everybody's playing. And it's just like, wow, this is amazing.
You know,
it's just amazing to me. I haven't followed this. I only followed this since after 2014. And because I stumbled upon InfoWars, I was like, oh, my God, if I knew this 10 years ago, what was going on? Like, if I'd listened to Alex, he's 10 years older than me, Alex. If I was listening to this 10 years ago, oh, my God, they never would have beat me. See, just real quick, they polluted my property where I live in northern New Jersey at the top of the mountain. I got a great well. They polluted it. They thought I was going to move. I didn't move. I was clean after a year. All of this stuff happened. I was in a parallel universe with the government. My little government in this, it's a big town, but my neighborhood's little. And I was like in a parallel universe with, right, you know, the authorities here, and all of this stuff happened. If I kept talking about it, I could talk you into spring.
Well, and then it all makes sense when you realize how interconnected all of it is and how they keep using the same strategies on small scale and the big scale. That's really interesting. Now, the people I've heard that are like raving about Trump, and you don't really see them on X that much unless they're like Trump sycophants. But like I talk to people, they aren't Trump sycophants. They don't gain anything from it. And they, you know, I'll talk to people and they'll just say like Trump is killing it. He is destroying every, like all of America's enemies overseas. They love what he's doing with China. They love what he's doing with the Middle East. They love what he's doing with Venezuela. And I see the disconnects. These guys are patriots. They really are. They love America. And they, what they perceive Trump doing is, you know, fixing all these problems that they have. But I notice it's people like they care about the military and they care about the stock market. And because stocks are so high and because the military is prioritized, they seem, you know, very confident in what Trump's doing. And it's the argument I make that there's kind of two types of Americas. They perceive sort of the corporate international economic America as benefiting. But I say those benefits are not going to the American people. It's not, you know, it doesn't help the American people when we make a trade deal with China because we're giving up 600,000 of our, you know, Congress, college, you know, university admissions, all this other stuff. So I see it as, you know, a difference in perspective of what you value or how you judge a success of a country. And it seems like people that are judging it by the stock market and by military activity think Trump is amazing. People that are looking around at the actual military material well-being of American citizens are saying Trump is missing the boat. How do you think that plays into your interpretation, Tony?
Well, I think that just the average people, they're doing great. That's how I see it. And I'm the poorest guy on my street without a doubt, you know. Medicare and all that. And, it went from confusing to very complicated, absolutely sophisticated what they did to me here. Mm. And my situation is small potatoes compared to what's going on out there. And like I said, people should be teaching their children about InfoWars or things similar, or just send them to Harrison Hill. Just to, you know, to get, because like my nephew, oh, I can't listen to the guy yelling at me after work. Well, then listen to Harrison Hill. He doesn't yell at you, you know? And it's like, you know, but you'll still understand the more, even if you tuned in for 15 minutes a day, over time, you get like, I got addicted to it. And I'm like, this is crazy.
Because it's not fun to be blind and deaf walking around. It's, you know, you got to, once you realize that there are people out here who actually know what's going on and can explain it to you, it's hard to not be tuned into that, not be on their frequency. Thank you so much for the call, Tony. I do appreciate it. And you hit on an important point there. Share the links. Share the stories. If there is one thing that is absolutely undeniable, it's that the awakening has been intense over the last decade, and a lot of that credit goes to Alex Jones and InfoWars. And I'm not even taking that credit myself, except that I've been blessed enough to play a part in this, but so have you, especially if you've ever been to thealexjonesstore.com, ever been to InfoWarsStore.com, ever shared a link, ever contributed in any way, then you're also, you know, just as equally important as every other Info Warrior, because it's our combined efforts that have actually shattered the Overton window, have actually broken, you know, awareness out of containment. We have been successful in that. So, you know, where it goes from here, who's to say whether politically we've had as much success as we'd want, I'd say no, but that is in no way trying to downplay the incredible success of just sheer awakening that we've had. And that is because people send the links out. They talk to their friends and family. They notice this stuff and spread the word. Or make your own videos and make your own talk shows and become your own TikTok superstar and make your own money through it. I mean, it's a gold rush right now. Only instead of gold, it's information and awareness and awakening. Instead of cash, we get spiritual validation. Thank you so much for the call, Tony. Let's go to Charles in Georgia now. Also says he does not think it's been a waste. Go ahead, Charles. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Harrison? No, I don't think the last 10 years has been a waste. Unfortunately, it may have been the smaller part of the U.S. or world population. What is it, 3, 5, 10%? That has been illuminated on how the game is played. And if that's all the number takes to make world changes, so be it.
Sure.
But I think on a larger scale, I think the human consciousness generally has been so bifurcated that we're thinking, talking, and acting out very minuscule efforts and concepts and thoughts that really won't advance our personal or our species in a big way. Think about it. 100,000 years ago, humanity was concerned mainly about the big animals that could kill us or keeping warm or finding food. We have conquered all of that now, but we still have a sense of we need to be fighting something. I don't know if it's in the genes or in our intellectual psychological stories that have carried down, but think about this. When Russia and the United States gets joins forces to go up to the space station and we can go to the moon, we put all of our efforts on a given project and we unify. Human beings do not have overall concepts of being a family, number one, because we're always thinking of ourselves as black or white, U.S. or Russia. This or that, we're bifurcated. And until and unless we think of ourselves as a unit and have a purpose, what in the hell do we think we're on this earth and have a conscious and life force to do? If we can't even formulate one or two simple concepts, well, to enjoy, to explore, to live as peaceful and healthily as we can. These are all common ideas that we all want. So let's work towards that. And I could talk forever, but let me wind down by saying this. Unfortunately, the world's vibration is broken down primarily into good and evil. I don't mean unfortunately, but it is. And I think unless and until we remember that there are secret forces that seek to keep us bifurcated so that they can have us do the work, so they don't have to work at all, so that their generations can be work-free. This has been the same thing from the Romans to the Egyptians to the Africans back in the pharaohs. There's always been these potentates that don't do work, but they'll say, we'll be your spiritual leader, we'll be your military leader, we'll be your wisdom sage. You go do the work and bring the spoils to us. And so there's been this bifurcation of the top of the pyramid and the rest. So we have to go back to this thing of saying, wait a minute, as human beings, we need to define a balance of power. What is a fair balance of power, whether it be wealth or other kinds of power? Now, let me say this. Go to, tell all your all the listeners to go to the Teeny Dot on YouTube. It's a simple video of 6 minutes that was done by Larken Rose, L-A-R-K-E-N, that you've had on a number of times back in the past, the Teeny Dot. It is the most powerful thing to explain that human beings in our great masses have the power to overturn the few that rule us immediately if we could just perceive where we're at, that we have that power. But we have to have, again, other people want to talk, but we're talking about, we always think in terms of fighting something or war, but that's because we don't have a vision of anything else to do. How about let's really get together and solve diseases? How about let's get together and solve homelessness and poverty all around the world? These are things that are needed, but and we cannot leave it up to our leaders, Donald Trump, He has his limitations. He's a great man. RFK, super. But I think the ultimate, and this is my last point. I can speak forever, but this is my last point. I think the ultimate thing that the universe wants us to learn, that the power and the knowledge and everything you need is within you, the individual. And until we individually get illuminated to something that points us in a higher direction, collectively we'll never get there either. So nobody's going to come and save us. We can believe that there's a God. What if God, you know, the Bible, is only waiting on us to do everything we can do within our power before he busts even one great to come down here on this earth again to help us? What if he's saying, as a good father, I taught you right, and there's no way in the world I'm going to treat you like a child now when you're an adult and come and help you when I know you have everything you need to help yourself? What if that is what God is waiting on? Well, then if we don't help ourselves and get in the fight within first to realize we're sovereign and fight any power that tells us we're not sovereign and force the systems to bring it back into balance, there's no reason why a few thousand or 10,000 people should have $1 billion when people are starving. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why we have these inequities. And finally, government. What the hell is government? Government is something we have. It's an illusion that we have said these people or this power can do this, that, and the other to us and for us.
I completely agree.
That is one of the major things that hurt us. We have to say, no, I am the government, and we will decide as the masses what we choose. So I could go on and on.
You're tearing down all the walls, Charles. I could let you go on and on, but I'd be in a dereliction of my duty. I guess I have to talk. I'm supposed to be doing a show here, but I could honestly just keep listening to you because you clearly, are on that next level and on that elevated level. I could go into like everything that you said. And I think at one point you were pointing to like when it comes to like this priest class and whether it's, you know, Rome or Egypt, and some people, intellectualize while everybody else works. And there's a great quote that's like, you know, because I was actually just thinking about this and how like you really do want like warriors in charge, not because you want people with a mindset of war, but because you want people who know what that is and aren't going to take unnecessary risks because they know what that's like and aren't going to send soldiers to die for a pointless cause because they were those soldiers at one point. And there's a great quote that's something like, you know, if you don't have soldiers as your thinkers, you end up with your thinking done by cowards and your fighting done by fools. And that's kind of where we're at, where the intellectual types have taken power and are totally disconnected and kind of incapable of even, you know, understanding the physical world around them and what's really compelling people to do things. Whereas the people on the ground are just doing what they're directed to do and not thinking too much about it. Man, very, very elevated stuff, there, Charles. Powerful. I guess to answer the question, you'd say it's a good thing. It is a good thing. It seems to me like the awakening that we've experienced, that is at the heart of it. And that's what we try to tell people. And there's the limitation of language. It's hard to express this sometimes, but it's one of the things that I've tried to at least insinuate over and over, which is like when you are first red-pilled, you can have a number of different reactions. None of them are good, right? You can go, oh my God, they're so powerful, I'm depressed. You can go, oh my God, everything's controlled, I need to just break it all down, I need to go crazy. Like, you can have a lot of different responses, but they're all wrong. And what you need to do is internalize it and, you know, reground yourself with like your spiritual beliefs and understandings. It can be easy to see a bunch of new stuff about people or a group of people or a nation or whatever and go, I hate them. And then you have to step back and go, I don't hate anybody. What's really going on here? Who's really doing what? And when you do that, when you do take yourself out of it a little bit and just look at it objectively, bird's eye view sort of thing, what you come out with is like, okay, everybody's a victim at a different level. And just because one group of people is doing something, claiming to do it on behalf of the whole group of people, that doesn't really count. It doesn't really matter, right? I can sit here and claim to represent everybody in Texas, but I'm really just some dude, right? Nobody's given me authority over to do that. And again, the reason it's kind of even hard to talk about all this because it is something you sort of just have to experience for yourself. You have to do the research and understand and not take your first conclusion that you might come to until you think about it a little bit more and really look at it from every different angle and listen to your enemies and say, okay, I'm going to try to see the world through their perspective. Can I empathize with them? Once I do empathize with them, am I on their side? You don't have to be on somebody's side to empathize with them. I can empathize with a criminal. I can understand what it's like to really want something so bad that you go and take it. I can understand what it's like to hate somebody just because they looked at you the wrong way and you just want to teach them a lesson because they've, you know, in your perception, harmed your honor, right? Like, doesn't mean I agree with you. I can empathize with evil. It's still evil. I can empathize with the other side and still recognize it's bad. So all of this is to say that when you, and it's not a line, it's not, I'm not saying this because I have done the calculus and I think this is politically the best way to approach it. It's because when you study this stuff, honestly, when you really try to get to the bottom of it, you see that it's the deception itself that's bad, that the people that believe the deception are victims themselves. You actually do come out on the other side understanding that hate begets hate and that love's the only thing that will, you know, defeat it, and that the people that you may have despised are in fact themselves much worse victims. Hell, look at Rob Reiner, right? You might hate Rob Reiner. You might have hated Rob Reiner when he was alive. The things he said were utterly despicable. And the way that he tried, I remember that he did, unless I'm mixing him up with somebody else, he did Princess Bride, right? And there were, like, he's trying to, anyway, you can not like him. You can hate him. You can despise him. You could do all of those things. Well, now we understand his life was hell. He had a son that was on drugs. They were fighting. He eventually is killed by his own son. Like, what a horrible tragedy. I mean, that family has been utterly destroyed. His daughter now has a brother who killed her parents. Like, so do you really hate him? He was a bad guy. You know, I didn't like him. I didn't think he was exactly the most positive influence in American society. But then you understand this dude was obviously horribly miserable, like in a million different ways. Maybe that informed why he was saying some of this stuff. Again, doesn't mean that you go, oh, so I like him now. I mean, he still said that despicable stuff. But at least you can understand, like, okay, and maybe even you take comfort in that. You go, hey, I hate this guy because of what he says and I hate his ideas. But I know in the back of my mind, that guy has got to look in the mirror every day and he hates what he sees. I get to go home to my family who loves me and we all have a wonderful time. He's got to worry about his son overdosing in, you know, some gutter somewhere. Like, again, when you really, like, understand the human condition, you understand it's really not easy to condemn anybody. And it's that understanding that will actually get you out of the feedback loop of just despising everyone and trying to, you know, win over as if this is some just material contest. So, wow. Brilliant call, Charles. I really, really enjoyed that. I got so much that I was not able to cover today. I'm going to make sure to cover it tomorrow. I got all sorts of people talking about anti-Semitism and our chief anti-Semitism officer coordinating with big tech. I'm going to get into all of that tomorrow. So I'll see you then here on the War Room. Stay tuned, folks. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. Won't you? Please.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.